It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Ashley Esketha is here from CNET. Dylan Tweeney from Valley Mail. And from Mashable, it's Michael Nunez. We're going to talk about Mark Zuckerberg's presidential ambitions, the Instagram mood detector, White House email pranks, and good news, the podcast troll has been bested. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 627, recorded Sunday, August 13th, 2017. Do you inkwell? This Week in Tech is brought to you by WordPress. Your customers want to find you, so build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/TWiT. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TWIT to save 20% off any order. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you looking to hire a tech professional? With ZipRecruiter, you can post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a simple click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. And by the Ring video doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/twit and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with some of the best tech journalists around. And we have a fabulous panel for you. Say hello to Ashley Esketha, who was scheduled earlier, couldn't be on the show. I'm so glad you're back from CNET and everywhere else. Nice to see you, Ashley.
It's good to be here.
She has a newsletter. I didn't know this, from tinyletter.com/headglitch.
Oh, my God. I just started it, and it's going to be terrible. Please, if you want to subscribe to it.
That's the best. I'm signing up right now.
Caveat emptor. I don't want to make any promises, guys. I just want to do something fun and create. It'll be like more creative writing stuff, like a lot of the time.
But wait a minute, Ashley. I just want to comment about this. This is a little humanist. We need to confirm that you're a human before I can sign up. Really? Ashley, really?
Those are Tiny Letters policies, not mine. If robots want to sign up, just email me directly. I'll sign you up. It's really fine.
Just lie. All you have to do is say, please. I'm not a robot, and they believe you.
All robots listening to the show, and I know there are many, Elon Musk, please feel free to subscribe to my newsletter.
Also here from Mashable, Michael Nunez is back. Hello, Michael. Good to see you.
Hey, what's up? Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you back. You're in, New York, yes?
I'm in New York. I'm in an office without any air conditioning right now. So
very nice.
I apologize ahead of time if I get a little like warm, you know, but things are going well. Yeah.
How can you have because it's the weekend they turned
it's
off?
The weekend. Yeah, it's the weekend. I foolishly decided to come back for the podcast.
Brutal.
And I'm totally regretting that decision now. But I do have a nice cold beer.
Good.
So that is keeping me cool and hopefully will, feed me with plenty of good thoughts during the show.
Also here, first time in a year, and I'm glad to have you back. In fact, there have been some changes made. Dylan Tweeney, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you too, Leo.
You were at Wired and VentureBeat. What is Valley Mail?
So it's a security company that does email security. Essentially it helps authenticate email so that you know when you're getting a message that you can be sure who it's coming from.
So now I'm thinking it's not pronounced Valley Mail, but Vala Mail.
Yeah, I kind of prefer Vala Mail, but if you want to call it Valley Mail, Leo.
Yeah, I love Valley Mail, man. That's so cool.
Valley Oh my God, you totally took the idea for my Valley Girl email service. So I'm like so upset.
Oh my God.
Oh, this is cool. This is really cool. I use PGP to sign my mail, but I know it baffles everybody. say, what's this? And I have to decide because there's a couple ways I could do it inline, which puts a lot of gobbledygook in the actual email or as an attachment. And I've decided that people are more baffled by the attachment because they try to open it and they go, I don't understand, what's this P7 thing? What do I do with it? So if, at least if they see gobbledygook, they go, oh, that's some, Leo stuck some gobbledygook in there.
Leo's trying to hack us. That's what's happening. Sending us terrible viruses.
0.1% go, oh, yeah, let me see if it's really Leo. And so I shouldn't probably, this would be a better solution, is I guess what I'm saying.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll have to give it a try. It's for business, though, it looks like.
Generally for business, but yeah, I can if you want to set up Twit with.
I think we actually are set up with DKIM and SPF and all that stuff. We have a smart IT guy, and so
yeah,
I believe our email is properly set up. But
here, I'll tell you right now. I'll do a little live check, and I'll tell you.
Prove me wrong.
Okay,
first hour of the show.
Is it twit.tv?
Yeah.
Okay. My screen's very slow. This is very unimpressive now, all of a sudden.
Oh, so I could go to Valimail and find
out?
Yeah.
Oh, just enter twit.tv on your screen.
Oh, my God, you're so insecure. That would be good. If you want, Ashley will record that for you, okay?
100%, yeah, no problem.
She's not a Valley girl, but she can play one on TV, should it be needed.
I work in the Valley.
There you go. Which Valley?
San Bernardino Valley.
You should probably not say that out
loud.
The
actual Valley of the real Valley girls.
I think saying I work in the San Fernando Valley has different connotations in the rest of the world.
Well, that's Van Nuys. That's Van Nuys. That's the Valley. But I'm in Burbank.
Burbank.
I'm with all the cool people.
Beautiful downtown Burbank.
I'm with all the cool people.
Yeah.
So, Leo, your SPF has some issues.
Oh,
your defense has some issues.
Darn it. Oh.
Uh-oh.
Hey, try Leoville.com. See what happens in Leoville.com. I'm curious. Because that one goes through Fastmail. And I think Fastmail has, I've got it all set up at Fastmail.
But not protected whatsoever.
Okay,
sorry,
thank you.
Me.
Bye.
Yes.
I'll be calling you. Jeez. Never mind. I'll do the rest after the show. I don't need to go through all my addresses. Thank you, though, Dylan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, happy to help.
We've been covering for the last week, and it's really been a death march. I've never said the guy's name out loud. The Google engineer memo, that's all you have to say. I don't want to give him any additional publicity, although he has been now appearing in other media. Wall Street Journal. I saw him interviewed on Bloomberg TV. Emily, I thought, did a very good job, actually. But I think we can probably tie a bow on this now. He's been offered a job by Julian Assange. He's published an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Fortunately, it's behind a paywall. David Brooks of the New York Times said he should be fired. Said Sundar Pichai should be fired for firing him. I'm sorry. Which is, I think, the most extreme in the other direction. Go ahead. I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Oh, yeah. Now that he's working for Julian Assange, it'll be happily ever after for him, right? That takes
care
of it.
Sure.
They belong together.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if he'll take the job, but they definitely belong together. So, but it would be remiss if we were covering the week's news, not to mention that that's been in the news all week long and everybody's weighed in on it. I've heard from every men's right activist in the world on Twitter. Ashley, you're a woman. Here's the thing I thought.
I am a woman. Wait a minute.
I think a lot of men read it and kind of went, yeah, okay. Not necessarily agreeing or disagreeing, but just not offended by it, like blowing it off, ignoring it. And I think every woman I know who read it was infuriated by it.
My response was just like, ugh. Like, I'm so, this is exhausting. Like, I mean, it's just,
well,
you know,
it's
a lot of really great men and women, coders, engineers, scientists. I think it's silly for anybody to say that, you know, you can't say that science says men are genetically better at the whatever, you know, you can't say these things because you also have to take into consideration society and history and systematic oppression of, you know, people of color and women. And it's just, there's a lot of different factors that go into this. And to just kind of make this weird blanket statement is, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, it's just silly. And
one thing some people said was, well, okay, granted, this is whatever, how you feel about it. It's dopey, it's insulting, it's wrong. But should Google have fired him for that? Shouldn't they tolerate speech that they disagree with?
So here's the thing. I mean, I think you can be a company that says, you know, if you're Google, you should absolutely say, you know, if you have a political view that says we should spend more money on defense, even though, let's say, Larry and Sergey don't believe that, like, that's fine. Like, I think that's fine. But this to me is not a political viewpoint. Like, this is a human viewpoint. This is a discriminatory viewpoint that is factually incorrect. Like, and so to me, that's the line crossed. Like, I think that if you want to donate to, if you are anti-abortion, if you are, you know, if that's a political view, if you want to get into those things, like, and be involved in those things, that's fine. But at the end of the day, even if I was a person who, you know, believed in all of some very like liberal stuff and then also wrote this manifesto, I would expect to be fired. Like, that's you're literally one. This man did not post this to Medium or write a blog about it. He literally disseminated it via email, company email, to employees in the company, which, one, as an HR person, makes you completely, you can't be worked with. Like, well, you've created a hostile work environment for yourself. Like, how can you even continue to be employed?
It's my understanding. Did he email it? It was my understanding. It's been floating around on a Google message board. Well, their internal Google Plus, and before that, a Google meme site for a couple of months without any notice.
Right. Sure.
It wasn't until Gizmodo published it.
Somebody noticed it. Somebody probably noticed it and had reported him. But I would imagine a large company like Google has a pretty serious, long-running, you know, HR process for letting people go.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with being racist or misogynist privately. I mean, certainly there are plenty that exist in Silicon Valley. But I think the problem here was that he wrote this down in a memo. And it's the same thing as, like, if you wrote it in an email, even though that is it could be considered a private message, something that's sent between two individuals. If that becomes public, you're held accountable to that stuff. Yeah. And so really, you should treat he put his name on it, and you should treat all internal communications as though they are public. And so in this case, he showed his flawed logic. And I think for Google, that is a liability, because you don't want to have someone that is that's just making bad logical arguments publicly, especially if he's representing the engineers that work for your company. So, like, that was a bad look, and ultimately, yeah, it caused a huge controversy, and so of course he was fired. I think that it's kind of silly to argue that he shouldn't be fired, because, like, look at Amy Pascal from the Sony hacks. You know, she wasn't responsible for the hacks and sent a lot of weird and wrong messages privately, but once those were exposed, she was held accountable, and this has happened dozens and dozens of times over history. I think it was right for Google to fire the individual. I think what was weird about his argument was just the pseudoscience that he used to elaborate his point for, you know, I don't know, like 5,000 words or something like that. I mean, the memo was way too long. I'm just surprised. I'm surprised that anyone would spend that long writing something for, for internal purposes. And yeah, I just thought the logic was, like, completely flawed and
what
weird.
What if this guy just had a little impedance mismatch? He thought he was in college still. This is the kind of thing you could posit in college and then have a Socratic dialogue about and then be shot down or whatever. And I think Google probably for a lot of employees feels like that kind of open,
like a campus,
freewheeling campus environment.
They call it a campus.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Right.
And he maybe just kind of thought, oh, he didn't think it was a company. See, I mean, I understand from the company's point of view, it's going to be pretty hard to assign him, for instance, to be on a team with another woman. If you were a woman, you wouldn't want to work with the guy, right? So I can understand why this isn't going to work at a company. But Google kind of fosters this impression that it's a little bit more open and freewheeling.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's a fair point.
I think that this sort of actually plays maybe a little bit, and I'm curious as to all of your opinions as to this. So my personal story of the worst I've ever had harassment online was I used to be Android Ashley. So that's how I started hosting. I hosted a show called This Week in Android. And
see, that's why you have to let robots subscribe.
It's so true. And well, the secret is I'm actually a robot. So so I 1 year I was like, you know, I probably should get a second line to see what's going on in iOS because I don't really know what's going on there and I don't have any iOS devices. So I got an iPhone as a second line and I think I tweeted about it or at, like maybe I posted about it on MySpace. I don't even remember. Like, no, it couldn't have been MySpace. I think I tweeted about it. And I got emails from people saying they hoped I was raped while waiting in line for my iPhone. They hoped that somebody had written me an email saying that they hoped the battery exploded and disfigured me permanently so that they would never have to see my hideous face on screen again on their phone. I mean, I got all kinds of just terrible messages, many of which used the term "I whore," which I thought was clever, but also really horrible. But yeah, it's like at the end of the day, I think that we ascribe it is very easy to think that these companies, whether you're an employee or a customer, are our friends. Right. So like which is why I think so many people get so defensive about the you know, the Apple versus Android war and things like that, because they really consider these companies to sort of like be their friend. And when they do things that their favorite company doesn't like, they get even more angry than when, you know, it's a company they don't care about.
It's a religion.
You know,
it's akin to a religious war.
It really is. And they get so upset, like a devout Android user would get really upset maybe about this firing and be like, Google, how could you do that? You know, it's like, I don't even know you. But it really is this sort of emotional response. And I think that's really kind of a big part of the response here. And also the reason he wrote this is, you know, you have this feeling of, you know, well, this company, I work here and we're all cool. And, you know, Google's my friend. And it's like, but Google's also your employer, and it's like, and Google's also a business, and they're out to make money, and it's right. Like you have to remember these things. And I think that's
forget.
The thing that it's easy. It's so easy to forget.
It's easy to forget. Yeah, it's easy for employees apparently to forget.
You know, this story also touched on something that that I wrote about a lot last year, which is that that there's underrepresentation among a lot of groups in Silicon Valley, and you know, this was at the heart of this engineer's memo, the fact that it was considered an anti-diversity memo. So his argument was that it's really hard to find talented engineers and thinkers in certain groups, such as, let's say, Black and Hispanic. And so that is why there is underrepresentation among those groups. And he argued that to hire people or to promote the hiring of those individuals would be to lower the standard for Google.
Ugh,
and so
that's reprehensible. That's such a tired argument, and
you know, I think that that the reality is that that this really gets to the core of something that's going on in Silicon Valley, which is that companies like Facebook and Google and other conglomerates or you know, multi-billion dollar companies are hiring from the same very selective schools as they should. You know, these are very in demand jobs. But what ends up happening is that you have small groups of about 20 people, at least in the case of the trending topic story that I read about last year. There was a group of about 20 people that that were making decisions that influenced tens of millions of people's lives and even hundreds of millions of people's lives. And you know, since even writing those stories, I've been messaged by a number of different contractors and employees at different companies that are making decisions that they're uncomfortable with and are unable to really speak out and are unable to really hold these companies to account. And the underrepresentation side of it is important because, you know, you have this select group of recent graduates or very young people that are making decisions that that influence a lot of different people. And when you don't have members of certain communities, such as Hispanic or Black or even a certain gender group such as women, then you're not building these algorithms or these artificial intelligence systems to take into account the the lifestyles and the experiences of these different people. So, you know, one outcome, for example, is like Google Images used artificial intelligence to identify what was in a photo. And this was a couple of years ago, but this was a famous failure for artificial intelligence because Google Images identified gorillas as black people.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that's a huge problem, but it's something that you can avoid if you have just one black person on the team, right? Like, you know, you end up inserting biases that you don't actually mean to insert. And I think this is a more prevalent issue than people really understand.
It will get more prevalent as we move forward with AI and all kinds of different systems that are, you know, virtual assistants and things like that. Like, this is only going to either get worse, or if we choose to bring all those voices to the table, maybe it gets better.
There's actually a pretty good argument
In favor of diversity along the kind of economic lines that this guy was suggesting we need to follow, which is that, you know, if you compare more diverse teams to less diverse teams, the more diverse teams are typically more innovative, more flexible, mm-hmm. more creative, and they
Absolutely.
Produce better results. And the study after study has shown that. And I think that as companies come around to understanding that, we're going to start to see, you know, I mean, not just because it's a good thing or because it's the morally right thing to do, which it absolutely is, but I think you're going to see a lot of companies like Google and Facebook and Apple, you know, increasingly striving to increase diversity for the reasons, you know, that you were saying, Michael, partly because it makes your products more accessible or more interesting or more compatible or better for a wider variety of people, but also because the teams that you have in-house are just going to become more creative and, I don't know, fertile for idea generating, and they're going to produce better work.
I
was just going to say, I agree with that. And if I were a company hiring engineers, I would not only want those Ivy League engineers, I would also want people who, you know, like we look at these innovators who have started companies, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, like look at all these people who have had very different backgrounds and ways of learning. And so I think to count out somebody just because they didn't go to an Ivy League or vice versa is unfair. It just, like everybody says, it limits what you're actually making at the end of the day.
It's challenging because you're talking about groups in a generalized way, but each employee is an individual.
Sure.
And so you have to hold it in both ways, because I mean, you think of the women in Hidden Figures who were not only women, but African-Americans, and nobody thought they could do the math, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're black women. I mean, that's as low as you can get from their point of view, as a bunch of white male engineers. But they're individuals. But look at the demographics. I'm sure Google wants to put this whole thing behind it, not just because it's good business, but because it's kind of embarrassing. If you look, this is their most recent diversity.
Kind of.
Look at their diversity report.
20%. Yeah, this is
embarrassing. This is tech. 20% women, but it's even worse if you look at African Americans, 1%, Hispanic people, 3%. It's not a good, this is current. They just hired a VP of diversity. This timing of this was bad for Google.
Well, and also it just shows their failure on both sides, right? Like, so people like the engineer that wrote that memo are upset because they think there's an active program that is essentially removing like-minded individuals. But then on the other side, it's like I know a lot of people that are very upset about these diversity reports, because both Google and Facebook in particular seem to champion themselves as these like utopian, you know, progressive
bastions of progressivism. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's like when your staff is like 1% black,
that's not good.
In both cases for Google and Facebook, it just shows that, that talk is cheap essentially. And that, you know, these companies are not employing the ideals that they at least, you know, tell the public. So
it's
there's
my
a little
guess
bit
that's
of,
why he got fired so quickly. That this is something, it's just like the VP of diversity just said, that's it, we got to fire this guy. This is bad.
What's really upsetting to me about this story is that Pichai was going to hold, meetings to talk with Google employees about what had happened and take their questions and, you know, do the whole town hall thing. And they had to cancel those because people were reporting that they were starting to get harassed online and doxxed and like that. I mean, that's ridiculous.
It's
like,
become Gamergate. Upset, this is the Gamergate crowd.
Exactly.
Milo Yiannopoulos posted on his Facebook page 8 Google employees who criticized the post, and then Sundar was worried for their safety.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Unbelievable.
But I mean, that's not just Gamergate anymore. About... This is everywhere. This is, I mean, we saw it's in Charlottesville right now.
Yes. It's so
sad. It's troll culture. This is what this is.
Do you think there are more trolls than before, or just that they're more, they feel empowered, or what's going on?
I think
I read
social
a really
network, Ashley first, and then you can go.
Sorry.
This is such a weird thing to say. I read this guy's stuff. His name's Film Crit Hulk, and he's a really smart guy. Talks about movies a lot, and he wrote this article that I can't recall the name of, but he talks a lot about how pop culture has really kind of crafted this generation of disaffected young mostly but not all white men who do things for the lulls, and that that things don't matter, that nothing matters, everything's a big joke, and it's a terribly interesting article. And he kind of breaks down how the rise of, you know, TV shows like South Park, which I think can be extremely powerful and satirical, also kind of encourage that sort of not giving any damns about what happens to anybody. Like, it's sort of this self-perpetuating cycle of, like, you know, pop culture and then the internet culture sort of like makes it this toxic disease. And I think that at the end of the day, it's weird, I remember when the internet started, and I don't necessarily think it's worse. I just think it's louder, and it's easier more than ever. It's easier for anybody to find other like-minded people regardless of what that interest is. And so so that can be used for great good, or it can also be used for great evil. And so I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't think anybody really knows yet. But at the end of the day, I mean, for me, like, I sign off of all of my stuff on CNET and everywhere else with Be Good Humans. And really, that's all we can do is just be better. Like, it's be more aware, listen to people who are not like us, meet them, all that stuff. So that article is, it's really fascinating. And I'll look up the name of it, but
I have it right here.
It is
good.
A really, really great article.
Yeah, Film Crit Hulk Smash, Dystopia and Class Divide.
I think that's one of his newer ones.
Oh, this was May.
Yeah,
it talks about the episode 1 of The Wire and the killing of Snot Boogie, or is it this one?
Yeah, it's PC called PC Culture versus the Big Joke.
Okay, good.
That's
all right.
Okay. That's the one. PC Culture versus the Big Joke, and it is one of the, it's a really good read. It's a long read, but I highly recommend it. It's just, it's really fascinating. And if you're out there and you're listening to the show and you don't understand a lot of this, like, internet culture stuff, I totally get it. Because a lot of people don't spend their time in Reddit subreddits, or, you know, they don't spend their time doing this stuff or hanging around those people.
I have to say, of course, there is the For the Lulls, we're joking, it's all a joke. But I also get the feeling it's not a joke. It's a joke, not a joke. You know,
of course not.
Sorry, not sorry. And they cover it with the joke.
I was just
that
kidding.
Gives, that
I was
lets
just kidding.
Them off the hook.
It's cover. Absolutely.
But they're dead serious, right?
There's right, sort of exactly. an asymmetry, yeah. too, between, like, I can get away with joking about this because I'm a white guy. But, you know, the impact on you, because, like, if I'm joking about, like, raping you, God, or some horrible thing like that, right? Like, the... Like, I can pass that off as a joke, sort of, among my peer group, but the impact on the people that it's targeted at is so horrible. So it's like,
right?
I don't know. That's like, seems like baked into the structure of the internet somehow. It's really unfortunate. I don't have a good answer.
It's hard. No, and I agree.
Ashley, you can defend gaming, but I think I'm going to see what you say about this. I think we grazed a okay, and I understand this is inflammatory, probably as bad as the Google memo. I think we raised a generation of people who lived in their basements, did not communicate with other people, spent all the time on the screen. I think it's getting worse with smartphones, by the way. And that this generation of people never had to relate to other people in any way except gaming. And as a result, they're somewhat damaged. They're asocial.
I would disagree with that. I think that what has happened, and I, this is what I feel maybe is my kind of hypothesis on this, is that boomers and yuppies raised two generations of kids, Gen Xers and millennials, and Gen Xers are raising younger millennials now, or I guess what are they, Gen Z now? But
yeah,
let's just say millennials, because that's the one, you know, we're killing everybody with our avocado toast or whatever.
Right.
So we'll focus on that. But like, my parents did not regulate or otherwise pay attention to what I was looking at on the internet when I first got the internet. Like I remember it very clearly because they had no idea what it was, and neither did I. And so it just was like, oh, it's like a phone call, but for everywhere or for everything. Like, and I think that for a long time, when we first opened up the internet, there were a lot of really big gaps in oversight, and by parents specifically, and maybe even teachers. But at the end of the day, like, you have this time period where a lot of people who are now, let's say 25 to 35, have had very little oversight on what they see online or what they saw online when they were younger. And they know, you know, how to find like-minded people. They know how to organize really well. They know how to brigade people. It really is, like, to me, I think, and I hope that because millennials have so much experience always being connected, like, we are literally the earliest part of millennials is like early mid-80s. That's the last generation of people who will ever remember not being connected.
Yeah.
And I think that,
well, it's going to have some effect. I mean, it's got to have some effect.
To raise a kid, like, if I ever decide to have a kid, I am so much more aware,
right,
of what is out there that I feel I would be more vigilant now, more so than maybe my parents were when I started using the internet.
Yeah.
So I,
well,
it feels like
changed in that time, that might
help.
Though. I mean, you have
of course
to at least, you know, AOL is much different than
that's true.
I assume that you were on AOL, but like, that's much different.
Oh, I had Prodigy. I was very special. Prodigy.
Wow.
Prodigy.
Okay. So mad credit.
Well, that's why you turned out okay.
Deep cuts. Got to get that Prodigy pen pal.
Yeah. No, I mean, Prodigy was big. But yeah, I think, like, things have changed a lot since Prodigy and AOL versus, you know, where we're at with Google and Twitter and Snapchat and a lot of these new forms of communication. I think you used one word that I completely agree with, which is louder. I think that these social media companies have, in many people's minds, are still startups. I think people think of them,
yeah,
as being run by kids who are wearing hoodies, yep, who are, you know, biking to work and hanging out in San Francisco somewhere. And that's just not the case. You know, these people have more influence than maybe any other American corporation and any other segment of American corporations. And so, you know, I think that's been the transition that I've seen and that I'm really trying to drill into, you know, with the work that I do, which is that now more than ever, these companies have a huge amount of influence, more than we even understand. And one way that we're starting to see this sort of bubble up is by giving a voice to people that are ill-informed and uneducated and sometimes hateful. Mm-hmm. And you know, it wouldn't surprise me. And, you know, the other portion of this is that being anonymous online has become more poisonous, more you can be more effective and spread more hate through the world by being anonymous now than you could in the 90s with AOL and Prodigy. And so, you know, my guess is that the people that are making horrific comments, like, you know, like some of the things that you mentioned earlier, were probably done under anonymous handles on Twitter or under anonymous screen names on Reddit. And anonymity online, although I long championed that, I'm starting to question the value.
Me too. We thought it was going to be a great thing, and now I'm wondering if we have maybe gone too far.
It's hard because there are so many places in the world that require it.
Yeah.
You know, it's dangerous for people to be online. It's dangerous, right? There's good reason for it, but then it's so hard. Others use it for bad things, and not to pull from Spider-Man, but it's, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, and the internet is probably the most powerful thing we've ever invented as humans.
Roland in our chat room says something interesting, and I think agrees with you, Ashley. He says, I have the cause and effect backwards. I was saying too much time in the basement leads to asocial people. He says there have always been forgotten people, but now the forgotten people have tools to vent rage without personal consequences. I think that's what both of you, Ashley, are saying, and Michael, is that we have these tools.
And find other asocial people.
Right. To gather and,
you know,
and amplify together, the voice.
I doubt Charlottesville would have happened.
Here, it's an echo chamber of hearing, like, confirmation that those ill-informed beliefs are true and valid.
Right.
And that feels good for everybody. Everybody wants to hear they're right, you know, and
Twitter and Facebook and Google have a responsibility, or are they just the common carriers? Are they just delivering the message?
Of course they have a responsibility. There's no neutral ground in this. I mean, every interface decision they make, everything they decide to do in terms of sharing, you know, what your friends like, or showing you search results, or pushing certain kinds of ads to you based on what you've done, those are, like, I don't think you can say those are, like, morally neutral, just common carrier decisions. Unless you're some
Michael has
engineer
it right. I mean,
with no life experience.
Right.
Oh, you mean like the guy who wrote that memo?
Yeah,
exactly. but it's like, but Michael has it right, where it's like these people who run these companies have tremendous amounts of influence over what we see in our everyday lives, maybe even more so than our parents or our friends or our family. I might spend more time on the internet than I do seeing actual real life people, like, during my week. And so that's a lot of responsibility.
And I'll give you a small anecdote. You know, like, one of my friends recently announced that she was pregnant. And, you know, what I told her was that we were talking about Google's influence. She has a Google Home in her living room. And what I said was that Google probably knew that she was pregnant before even her husband.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the responsibility of, like, knowing that type of information. You know, these companies use deductive reasoning based on your behavior and search results and a variety of other things to figure out what your general disposition is, the information that you're looking for. You know, sometimes it can be very helpful, and obviously these companies try to do that, but other times it can be emotionally manipulative. So, you know, Amazon is trying to sell more products day after day, more and more products year over year, right? And Facebook is trying to get you to spend more time on their network day after day and year over year. And the way that they do that is by toying with your emotions, using little red dots to show you that you have a notification, or maybe promoting your, you know, some girl that you have a crush on in your newsfeed. And there are so many decisions like this that are happening behind closed doors.
It's so true.
Cashmere Hill wrote this story 5 years ago for Forbes, how Target figured out a teen girl was pregnant before her father did. And it's because of where she went in the store and what she was doing. So this is not new. In fact, I remember this from years ago. Just from your zip code, people could tell what magazines you might subscribe to or were likely to, what kind of cars you were likely to buy. But it's just gotten so refined and so good. Now, I want to take a break, but when we come back, who has more data than anyone about you? You could say Google, and maybe it's Google, but I think Mark Zuckerberg might have more data than anybody else about you. And I also worry about what he might be doing with that data. We're going to take a little break when we come back and talk about Mark's latest hire. But first, a word from WordPress. WordPress runs 28% of all the websites in the world, including my blog, including Quartz, including some of the best publications in the world. They run websites for many major companies. It's because the WordPress platform is powerful, robust, and easy to use. If it's good enough for these big businesses, it's great enough for your small business. You don't need to be a web expert to create a site at WordPress.com. You can make it easier for your customers to find you, to connect with you. It's really important, frankly. If you're a business, and you didn't have a Yellow Pages ad, well, how was anybody going to find you? Then it was, if you don't have an answering machine, how are people going to leave you a message? Now, I think if a business doesn't have a website, even if it's a plumber, I'm much less likely to use them because I can't find out more stuff about them. You got to have a website. And I know, if you are a plumber or a school teacher, a handyman or a restaurant, that's not your – designing web pages ain't your business, and you don't want to make it your business, but you got to have that website, WordPress.com. Start with amazing templates, experts who can guide you through the entire process. They have the best support. And WordPress.com is a community. I've run self-hosted WordPress since the early 2000s, but when I moved my site to WordPress.com, suddenly I'm part of a larger community. People follow me. There's a front page. They can promote your stories on there. And I have 500,000 followers now on WordPress, and that blew me away. That happened so quickly. You'll boost your visibility, too, because, of course, search engine optimization, that's built in. And these guys have been doing it a long time. They know exactly what buttons and knobs to push. Social sharing makes it very easy for your readers to spread the word about your site everywhere else. Lots of WordPress. If you have a business site, I turn on the AMP plugin. I highly recommend that. That way your pages load faster on mobile thanks to Google AMP technology. I turn on a number of really great plugins that make my site better automatically. HTTPS automatically. It's very easy. And I want you to go there right now because we've got a special deal at WordPress.com/twit. You get 15% off any new plan purchase. I registered when my daughter was born 25 years ago. I registered her name. .com. And I registered it for 20 years. I figured if she doesn't use it by then, I just renewed it. If she doesn't use it by then, I could probably let it go. But I kept it. And now, 25 years later, she says, I need that website. I said, okay. Go to WordPress.com. Start it. We'll hook it up. It's very easy to connect it to that domain name. And then you'll be AbbyLaporte.com. WordPress.com/twit. Save 15% on your brand new site right now. So Mark Zuckerberg... We've talked about this before. I feel like he's going to run for president. And given the power that he has with the Facebook platform, I think he could just win just by, pushing a couple of knobs, slightly skewing the news feed, and it's over. He just hired. Now, he says over and over, I'm not running, except that he's doing a 50-state tour to meet people in every state. He's announced that maybe I am a Christian after all. I'm not an atheist anymore anyway. That much I know for sure. And he has now hired a pollster, Joel Benenson, who was chief advisor to Barack Obama, chief strategist of Hillary Clinton's failed campaign. Now, that may not be the best resume builder, but and he is in his bio, it says he's the only Democratic pollster in history to have played a leading role in three winning presidential campaigns. Mark Zuckerberg has hired him. Oh, yeah, to work for the charity. Come on. Do you guys, is Mark Zuckerberg going to run for president in 2020? And B, who could stop him?
Look at that tie the dude is wearing.
That's a president tie.
That is a presidential tie.
That's a cornflower blue presidential tie.
That's his speech at Harvard.
That's a quite a lovely tie, actually. Yeah. I'm impressed.
That's from him at Harvard getting his honorary degree. It was quite a good self-effacing speech. Talks about making a better world. The thing is, I think you can make the argument that Trump won due in large part to his very effective use, they didn't buy TV ads, of Facebook. Right?
Right. And what happens, here's the real question. What happens when Mark Zuckerberg divests himself of Facebook, which, I mean, at this point, he probably doesn't even have to.
He doesn't. This is another data point. When they created the charity, the Mark and Priscilla Chan sort of charity, they changed the bylaws of Facebook to literally say, and should Mark Zuckerberg take a government job, he can still run Facebook. And as we all know, government ethics no longer apply, so nobody's going to make him divest from the other side either.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're not going to make him divest.
He could run Facebook and the country. And
what happens if even just a small group of engineers who support him for president decide... again, with the whole, very small percentage of people making decisions that affect millions or billions of people. Facebook has 2 billion users, not obviously here in the U.S., but millions of users to say, well, we're only going to show positive stories about Mark Zuckerberg.
You can,
we're not going to show
any of that. All hands meeting where Mark says, now, I'm not going to tell you guys to do that, but I just want you to know it'd be okay with me.
I mean, they've already made that decision because that was part of the reporting that we did while I was formerly at Gizmodo, which was that they wouldn't allow stories about Facebook to trend within the trending news column on the site. And similarly, they were very strict about what stories they allowed to trend concerning Mark Zuckerberg. So they're definitely controlling the PR around his name. I just think that, you know, people are sort of jumping to conclusions with a lot of this, a lot of the decisions made around Mark Zuckerberg. I think he has to treat himself similarly to a politician because Facebook is all about trust, right? The second you stop trusting the network, you stop posting to it and you stop interacting with all of their different web properties. And so I think part of the reason why he's hired so many political experts is because he is trying to sort of rebrand himself after, you know, there was a long time when people hated Mark Zuckerberg, right? And and there was a
social
movie
network because of the social network, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So,
which wasn't
so, you know,
true.
I think we've sort of enough time has passed that that a lot of people have forgotten about that, right, movie, I think. But he still faces an uphill battle in terms of, you know, getting people to see him as someone that they'd want to have a drink with at the bar. And ultimately, that's kind of what he champions Facebook as. It's like it's all about communities, right, and sharing ideas. And it's essentially this like virtual bar that you can go to and hang out with to hang out with people and talk about, you know, different ideas. But
he's got dead eyes. It's the face of a happy, smiling person, but it's behind there. Yeah. There's a robot in there, in my opinion.
He can't sign up for my tiny letter.
and many people have said, oh, he's not going to run for president. Why would he want to? He runs Facebook is bigger than the U.S. He runs Facebook. I think mark my words. He will run for president. A nation will be desperate, will be thirsty for somebody, a technocrat, who seems intelligent, who seems like he can solve intractable problems that we're facing. And he said, I have a solution. Look, I don't need the money. I'm not in it for the money. I just want to make the world a better place. That's all I've ever wanted to do. And he's not going to be blatant on Facebook. It's going to be very subtle. You won't even know. But it will absolutely gently push people. And he's going to win.
Well, I mean,
I'm voting for The Rock.
For president.
I'm voting for The Rock in 2020.
The Rock is not going to win. We did.
He's a technocrat. Did you see that commercial with Siri? He was great. He loves technology. He used Siri in space.
I'm just going to say, I don't want to offend anybody, but I think we've had our Rock moment in 2016. I think the pendulum now has to swing.
I don't know. Fast and Furious 9's coming.
Gonna run for something.
You don't know.
I think it's going to be governor of California.
Well, it would make sense for him to work his way up, right? But
I think that I don't think he can. Like Trump is learning right now that, you know, it's not really a command and control position.
Right.
Being president is kind of like being asked to wrangle a ranch full of cats.
Right.
You know, it's like it's not fun. I think he'd be more interested in a job where he could actually get something done.
Underestimate his ambition. I don't think Mark Zuckerberg is the kind of guy who looks at the presidency and sees how it's being run today and says, oh yeah, I don't want that job. I couldn't do that. He's the kind of guy, wrongly or rightly, probably wrongly, who says, no, I can take this challenge on and I can remake this country.
What is that in The Social Network where he's like, you know what's cooler than $1 million, $1 billion? He's like, you know what's cooler than being the head of Facebook? Being the president of the freaking USA.
The leader of the free world. And I am not worried about Trump and an authoritarian becoming authoritarian, a demagogue. I am much more worried about Mark Zuckerberg in a very benign, smiling, we're going to bring everybody together way. I don't think that this ends at the United States. I think he wants to run the world. Now, is that crazy? That's crazy.
Now I'm scared. Yeah.
Well, Elon Musk is going to stop him because he says
Elon's Iron Man.
They were arguing a lot. Yeah. See, they've been fighting all the time. And so it's going to turn into
Elon,
a total.
Look, Elon knows that Mark is. That's why Elon dissed him.
He totally knows. Oh my God, he knows. He knows.
Well, and I think, you know, we now have a blueprint for someone transitioning from the business world into the political world. And so it's, you know, what you're saying, Leo, is not hard to imagine.
No.
It's kind of terrifying to think about. I'd like to assume that he still has, the business interests prioritized, you know, first in his mind. But it's really easy to imagine what you're talking about.
And by the way, add machine learning. And did you see this this study this isn't it actually, but Instagram has now able to they did some work and they're able to figure out if you're depressed from your Instagram photos. There it is. Okay. I'm just saying, Instagram is owned by who? Remind me again.
Facebook.
Face somebody. So what they did, it's actually kind of interesting. They took 139 people and they took all of their pictures, I think 43,000, some huge number of pictures. And then they also asked them, well, how'd you feel? How do you feel? And they were able to build a model which now does a better job than a trained psychotherapist at assessing the emotional tenor of a person from their pictures.
Is it just the pictures, or like they using the hashtag depressed?
Well, it's kind of, and it's weird stuff too. Like, it's if they do a lot of muted colors.
Yeah.
In the picture.
Like, I think blue,
and the filters they choose, too, that would be a, yeah.
And there are less spaces, I believe, was another key mm-hmm. point from that study. You know, the thing is that Facebook is actively and has published research on this type of stuff. This happens to be an independent organization, I believe, but Facebook is actively researching this stuff, and they have published publicly, you know, information about how they can determine your general disposition, so like whether you're sad, whether you're happy, and then also how they can influence it. So by, you know, promoting more depressing stories in your newsfeed, they can actually affect your general disposition. And this is something they openly admitted around like 2012, I believe. So we can only guess, you know, where they're at now. I think that's what terrifies me, is that there's no regulation in place for them to have to disclose any of the studies that they're doing on the psychology of their users and on like the emotions of their users. And this Instagram study reminds us of the fact that a lot can be determined by your behavior online. And by the things that you decide to post, by the keywords that you decide to use in tweets, and
sentiment analysis, they call it. And they're getting better and better at this. And this is a perfect example of machine learning applied against a giant data set. They do it for pictures. You can search Google for dogs. You know, search your Google photos for dogs. It's a very good. Well, interestingly, Instagram users who were depressed tended to choose the Inkwell filter. And happy ones tended to choose Valencia. So just think about it next time you choose a filter on Instagram.
Inkwell is like my favorite filter.
I love Inkwell.
Oh, no.
We're depressed. We didn't even know it.
You need to see somebody.
We didn't even know it. I think you have a good article on Mashable. Is Google eating the world, or is it Facebook eating the world?
Google
eating the world. Eating the open internet, but I call it the world because what else is there?
That's
right?
The world we live in. That's the world we live in.
I think we are completely underestimating what all of this data that we're giving Facebook and Google will be used for. For instance, somebody asked me today on the radio show, WhatsApp wants my contact list. I don't want to give it to them. And I said, well, what they say they're going to do with that is store it on their server, and if somebody you know in your contact list joins WhatsApp, they'll send you a message saying, hey, your buddy's on WhatsApp, you want to connect with them. But what I think they're really doing is, imagine if you had a billion people's contact list and then you cross-referenced it. You would know all the relationships anybody has. You would know who they talk to a lot, who they talk to a little. You would know who they work with. We had Rob Reed on last week. His new book, it's just fantastic. It's called After On. And in it, I don't think it's a spoiler because this happens very early on, there's a app called Flutter that has based on machine learning, and three of the protagonists go into a bar, and Flutter pops up a coupon offer. But it's more than that, because they know, because of when they arrived at the bar, that and that they're coworkers, that they must be having a work meeting. And this is minor, right? Obviously, they could figure all that stuff out. Flutter actually becomes sentient, but that's another another matter entirely. But I'm not worried. I am actually not worried about, you know, Skynet and sentience. I'm much more worried about what will really happen. And it, by the way, it will happen, I think, quickly. It will be like a catalytic reaction. It will be hockey stick-like, where all of a sudden the critical mass of data will be reached, may have already happened, we just don't know it, and Facebook will know everything. And will have so much data about you, they will know more about you than you do. Right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, you know, it goes even to the level of DNA research, right? Facebook, Google, I believe owns 23andMe, or maybe it's a former Googler, but either way, there are companies that are already set up to analyze your DNA, and I think people aren't even questioning.
They're a sponsor. I gave them a spit.
Yeah, and listen, like, they're doing a lot of really cool and interesting things. However, you have to ask yourself, do you trust a private company with your genetic code?
It was founded by Ann Wojcicki, and of course, Susan Wojcicki runs YouTube, and their mother rented the garage to Larry and Sergey when they started Google. So there is definitely a Google connection to 23andMe. There's no evidence that they're handing information over to Google.
No,
but
absolutely not. Yeah.
And what were you just saying earlier, Michael, about 20 people making all the decisions that affect the billions of us? I think we might have stumbled onto a corner of that nexus there.
Yeah,
And to go back earlier, it also is why it's so important that there be some diversity in this group, because they know everything. It should, you know, these are
what
dangerous
to do with
tools.
That data.
It's what you
it's
do.
It's what
with
to
that.
Do. Yeah. It's what we do with it, and the more diversity we have in voices, whether that is a poor white guy or a rich white woman or a rich Indian man or whatever, it doesn't matter, class, race, life experiences, life choices, the more diversity we have making those decisions is going to make what we do with that data better.
Maybe it's because I'm an old man.
Now I have a question.
Go ahead.
Do you guys do anything to prevent Google or Facebook from knowing too much about you?
No.
Because I'm
do.
Always like, yeah. I'm screwing around. I'm putting in fake information. I'll go months without using Facebook, and I'll use Twitter instead, and then I'll switch back. I use a different
Dylan.
I use DuckDuckGo now instead of Google
them.
For searches.
You think that fools them?
No, I mean, I'm just kind of like doing what I can to kind of monkey wrench it a little bit here and there. But
right.
Don't fuzz it. I want to. OK, I'll be the experiment. I'll be the guinea pig. I'm giving them everything. I'm 23andMe, everything. They're hiding nothing, not using any privacy filters.
But what you don't know, Leo, is there's an entire island of yous somewhere in the world.
No, I know that.
23andMe has cloned 50 Leo Laporte. And they're conducting all kinds of terrible psychological experiments.
Cheer me up, though. You guys are younger than me. I'm gold. I'm thinking maybe this is a symptom of getting older. I feel like we're heading into dystopia. That this is.
Oh, we're there. I think we're heading there.
Yeah.
You're supposed to cheer me up.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I think that the problem is that there's no proficiency in technology in Washington right now. And so you have companies that are essentially operating as monopolies or building to monopolies.
If you're Facebook and Google right now, you're going, hey, full speed ahead. We got 4 years. Yeah. Let's go. Why do you think the stock market is going up? This is good for business.
Who's driving that growth? It's technology companies primarily.
Right.
And so, so I think that, you know, we're living in a time where, you know, it's similar to the 1920s. These are essentially the robber barons of our time. They are building businesses that have disrupted entire industries. I mean, Amazon, by purchasing Whole Foods, is suddenly threatening the entire grocery industry. You know, that's wild. And any of these companies can do that by acquiring a certain business or by deciding that they're going to put resources into a given area. They can completely upend industries that have existed for decades. And so you see it with Tesla, Amazon, you know, Facebook is sort of a new, like social media is sort of a new thing, but certainly they have the resources to just drill in on any industry and upend it. And even Apple, you know, with watches, right? You know, that's something that for a long time people thought couldn't be upended, couldn't be disrupted. And tech companies have the power to essentially flip switch and decide that they're going to take over an industry. And that's just the time that we live in.
I think that in every major section of our history where we've had a series of technological innovation, like the Industrial Revolution, I think those people probably also felt they were living in a dystopia. And didn't know. There's a lot of uncertainty. I think that's very true. But I don't know. I mean, there's always a part of me that just believes in the inherent goodness of most people. Even the people who have all the power, a lot of them are decent people who make mistakes, sure. But I don't know. I think I'll still hold on to my Starfleet, Star Trek future someday. We'll get there.
That's not happening.
Look, like, I mean,
we'll get there. I think we'll get there. We'll be better.
But to be concerned doesn't mean that you're necessarily pessimistic, right? Like, I love technology. I've made a career playing with it and learning more about it, and that will never change. I'm an optimist at heart. However, I have access to things that a lot of people don't, and I think it would be wrong for me not to try to relay some of that information to essentially that's my job as a journalist, right? It's to talk to people that are working at these companies and figure out what's going on the inside and then hopefully relay that information to the public. And I think the one thing, like there seems to be a big disconnect between people using the services and downloading apps and looking at this, you know, what has been called the black box that runs a lot of these apps, and what's going on behind the scenes, how algorithms work, how, you know, the logic that's used to sort this information out. You know, there is a proficiency problem in America right now. And when people hear the word algorithm, I think they just like, they don't understand what that means and they get intimidated by it in a lot of cases.
Their eyes glaze over.
Definitely. And I don't blame them because it used to happen for me until I started learning about some of the algorithms that sort through these things. So like the suggestion algorithm in Amazon or the trending news algorithm at Facebook, you know, these are actually very rudimentary algorithm problems. It's elementary logic. You know, they're not quite as complicated as you might think. And I think that most people don't understand that. And also we don't have access to what that line of logic is. And I think that to me is more troubling than anything. We have no idea how Facebook, for example, decides to sort our newsfeed. I think in the long term, like in my lifetime, that's going to be a problem. And
it's a problem right now.
It's a problem right now.
That's why Facebook is powerful, because they use algorithms to shade the feed. And we don't know what they're, I mean, we could presume they're optimizing for stickiness, but maybe not, because remember they deprecated the link bait, which was probably very sticky.
They can choose at any time to change that.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing. And they do. Right. And they do. And they never tell us.
Non-transparently, completely.
Right.
I think we have a lot more ability to affect the direction of technology than we think we do. I'm really grateful for people who are trying to explain and bring to light and share with the rest of us what's going on inside these companies. Because I think in some cases, it turns out that, you know, if consumers care enough, if the users of these products care enough, even though there may be 2 billion users of Facebook, they can still make a difference. I mean, look at the Delete Uber campaign, right? Like, I'm not going to say that fixed Uber's problems overnight, but it definitely has made the company take seriously its issues in a way that any amount of negative press coverage or government action had failed to do. So I think they're, you know, if people care enough and they're aware enough about how Facebook and Google and Amazon are affecting our worlds, I think that we have a lot more power than we give ourselves credit for.
I hope you're right.
I agree.
That's true.
I agree.
Oh, good. Just remember what Littlefinger says. Chaos is not a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
So true.
Mm. I don't know if it's true, but maybe that gives us hope. Maybe we're just climbing the ladder.
I mean, I'm going to be a robot in 50 years, so it's fine.
Is that your plan? Because that was my plan. I just wanted to put my brain in a jar or something.
No, yeah. That's 100% my plan is to be a robot. And
you're
then
young
maybe
enough,
I'll
you could achieve it, actually.
Shoot myself into space and just float around and see what happens.
I'm like a guy who's running down the train track. The train's pulling out of the station. I'm just hoping I can catch it before I die.
Leo, there's a whole, I don't so even bleak. Know what you mean, because 23andMe has taken your DNA and TRAPPIST-1 is a colony of Leo Laporte.
Oh, I hope so. But
you guys, I'm going in the opposite direction. In like 20 years, I am going to be unplugged and sitting under a redwood tree way up in the mountains
somewhere.
That's
more likely my end as well, Dylan. Yeah. I don't know, though. I hate to, don't you want to know how it's going to all turn out?
At some point, I'm going to be like, screw it. I'm out of here. Find me an island.
Be like Bicentennial Man. At some point, you'll be like a robot that chooses to be a human because you want to go back to humanity. It'll be like that.
Yeah.
Wow. It's fascinating stuff. Ashley Esquetha is here. She's from, how do you want me to attribute you? From CNET, but you do so many things.
Yeah. It's hard because I'm a host and I am a senior editor at CNET. That's my main job. But then I also...
You do that comic book podcast now, right?
Yeah, I host Alpha Comic Book Club over at Nerdist, which is really fun on their Alpha subscription video service, which is it's pretty cool. Like, I really like it. I'm getting into a lot of new comic books that I wouldn't have read otherwise. So it's fun.
You're the comic book person who didn't grow up reading comic books. You're like you're like the, you know, let's tell Ashley about this. She's going to read it for the first time. Stuff.
I was really excited because we did Fables, which I'm a really big fan of, and I had read before, and the other two people had not. So that was a big win for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Alpha cool. Comic Book Club. Oh, and do you have to pay to listen to this?
I think Alpha's like $5 a month. It's their subscription video thing. They have a whole bunch of different shows that are on Nerdist Alpha. And then it's sort of like a Comic-Con HQ or, you know, any of those like sort of smaller channels. But yeah, there's me talking with Hector Navarro and Damien Poitier.
Nice. Did they make you wear that flannel shirt?
No, I bought it for myself.
It's Lumberjack Ashley.
Dude, Lumberjack Ashley is awesome.
No kidding. I'd buy that doll. From Mashable.com. It's great to have you, Michael Nunez. He's the deputy tech editor over there. And a guy who's already kind of retiring from tech, kind of in a way, formerly Adventure Beat, now at head of communications at Valley Mail. Dylan.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Valley Mail.
I am not retiring from tech.
I guess not.
Nor am I retiring from writing. I'm not a journalist at the moment, but I'm still writing.
Are you posting on a Medium? Where are you writing?
I haven't decided where like everything ultimately lives. I put stuff on my blog, but I also put it up on Medium and LinkedIn and whatever other new platform comes along. I'm sure I'll be posting there too.
Dylan.twinney.com.
That's it.
Yep. Our show today brought to you by The Tracker. Now, this sometimes tech does make your life better. If you've ever lost stuff, you know, or if you've ever spent the morning late for work trying to find your car keys, you know that there must be a better way. Like, why do I keep losing my phone, my car keys? And, you know, if you've used Find My iPhone, you know, you realize there is a better way. And that's kind of what the tracker is. It's like Find My iPhone for all of your other stuff. So what you do is you take the tracker. They have two little ones now. There's the Tracker Bravo. It's about the size of a quarter, but lighter. It's anodized aluminum. And they have the new Tracker Pixel, it's even smaller and lighter. I think it's the smallest Bluetooth tracker ever. And it lights up with LEDs around the, it helps you find stuff, not just with audio signals, but with lights. You put it on your keys. That's the first place. I put it in my backpack. And then I put it in my luggage. You put it on the remote control. You put it on the dog. It's small enough to put in a collar, and they have a little waterproof holder for it to protect it. And now once you paired it to your phone, you could see where your stuff is, where your trackers are, or whatever the tracker's attached to, on your phone. You get a map. But here's the other cool thing. If somebody takes your, let's say you put it on your keys. Now, you know, when you leave the room, your phone will say, hey, you left your keys. And by the way, the other way around, too, when you leave your phone lying around, your keys start going, weep, weep, weep. You can also, if you say, oh, I know I left my phone somewhere around here, press a button on the tracker. That'll make the phone, even if it's silenced, make the phone make noise. That's very handy. I really like that. But also there's this issue, because once you get out of Bluetooth range out of 100 feet, all the tracker software can say is the last time I saw this. But here's the beauty part. There are 4.5 million. Actually, it's got to be more now. More like 5 million trackers out there all over the world. And anytime anybody running the tracker software sees your keys with the tracker on it, it'll ping your phone, and now your map will be updated to the last time anybody saw your keys. So no matter where they are, look at this map. All over the world, you can find your stuff. The lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market, that's the Tracker Pixel. Both the Tracker Pixel and the Tracker Bravo have replaceable batteries, unlike some of these other guys, so you don't have to throw it out. You could just put the battery in every year. It's Bluetooth LE. It goes about a year. I love it. Take advantage of Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee. No risk. See that? You could put there's engraving. You could put on the Tracker Bravo or a picture. And if you go right now to thetracker.com and use our promo code TWIT, you get 20% off your order. So just load up the basket. Save 20% with the promo code TWIT. TheTracker.com. Promo code TWIT. The Tracker! I like this product because I misplaced it. I think Newsweek estimated that people spend 55 minutes a day looking for stuff that they own, but they don't know where the hell it went.
That's about you can easily believe that one.
Yeah, I believe it. I totally. It's the way it is in my house. We had a lot of fun.
We have a dog now.
Oh, what kind of dog? Oh, what's her name?
That's Philo.
Okay, I got to ask you, Philo as in Philo Doe or as in Philo T. Farnsworth, the inventor of television?
Philo T. Farnsworth, the inventor of television.
Wow.
Oh.
Deeply geeky.
Whoa.
Yes,
whoa.
Deep cuts. Got to get those deep cuts.
That's nice.
Yeah. He's our new puppy. So
is he
he's
a greyhound? What is he?
He's an Italian greyhound. We have three Italian greyhounds. So he's about 6 months old.
He's beautiful.
And he got sad. He came in here, wandered in here, and was like, oh, would you please pay attention to me?
I don't need his Instagram to know he's... Now, they don't get as big as regular greyhounds, right?
No, they'll probably be... our two older ones are about 17 to 20 pounds, and then he'll probably be about the same size.
So
and they're
like
actually kind of big for Italian greyhounds. Oh, yeah, okay. They're actually a little bit big for Italian greyhounds, which are usually around like 12 pounds.
Are they neurotic?
He's big.
Are they like crazy?
We rescued one, and she is very neurotic.
Yeah, that's sad.
Mostly, they're kind of couch potatoes, though. Like, they're snuggly little dogs. They're like, they love people. They're little Velcro dogs. And can be annoying, but, like, they're also really goofy and funny, and they have lots of personality.
I look for a dog that just wants to sleep. That's what I'm looking for.
Thank you.
Okay, we've done the depressing stuff.
Yeah, there was a lot of it this week. Too much of it, frankly.
So much.
I'm telling you, we're heading
too much.
I have never been so depressed in my life. And I don't think it's me. I think it's situational. I just feel like what happened? In fact, I'm starting to not care because I think Kim Jong Un's going to set us off a nuclear war, and it doesn't matter.
Have you tried using a different Instagram filter, Leo?
Maybe I should stop using Inkwell. I think that's the problem. I'm going to start using Valencia from now on.
Nashville and Valencia only.
It's funny because isn't that the saying that if somebody is an optimist, they look through the world with rose-colored glasses? Look at the world through rose-colored glasses?
And now you can say they look at it through Nashville.
Through Nashville. I'm a Hefe fan myself. That's kind of in between.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah,
it's nice.
It's warm, but it's a little muted. It's kind of it's my personality. Actually, there's an algorithm. This is from the MIT Technology Review. There's an algorithm that's been trained on emoji that knows when you're being sarcastic on Twitter. This is one of the toughest computer problems. How do computers understand sarcasm?
Can I be honest for a second? Like, how hard was it for this algorithm to figure out people are being sarcastic on Twitter, right? Like,
it's like 90% of the time.
Oh, look, 99% of people are sarcastic on Twitter. Like, and that seems like a really... That this study seems suspect to me. This is a little bit suspect.
Confusing about this study to me is there's no emoji for sarcasm, right? Like, what emoji do you use?
Maybe it's an eye roll.
Yeah.
Is there an eye roll? What's an eye roll emoji?
The one that's like, you know, it's just a little face and rolling his eyes.
Oh yeah.
And then I use the one with the upside down smiley face. That's a good sarcasm one.
Yeah,
I think even just standard smiley can work. You know, there's a lot of nuance here because you can. It depends on how creative you are.
What about that one where it's just eyes and a line? Like it's not. Yeah. I don't. You know, it doesn't mean anything. Yeah. It's like
expressionless.
Flat,
Yeah.
So according
or the one without a mouth. That's another good one.
According to this article, again, MIT, right? Robot was better at identifying sarcasm on Twitter than humans. Humans average score 76%, robots 82%. And now there's a Deepmoji website. They're calling it Deepmoji. where you too.
I take back everything I said. We do live in a dystopia.
Yeah.
So, well,
I take it all back.
Deep Thought, right? Deep Blue, and now Deepmoji. So. Should I type a sentence? How about this? Chaos is not a pit. Chaos is a ladder. That'd be a good one. Let's see if it thinks that's sarcastic or what. So we're going to submit it.
Maybe they can help us figure out what is going to happen in Game of Thrones.
high confidence that I'm being sarcastic. I don't know. Ooh. Look, they gave me a fist bump. They gave me, what is that, crossed arms one. I don't know.
Oh, that's a good one. Crossed arms lady.
Same that one.
They gave me a skull.
What is happening in this? Is it like this? I'm trying to recreate this, and I'm... Is it like this?
Okay.
What is this?
Okay, everybody.
I've never made this gesture
Dylan,
in my
Michael,
life.
Michael, Ashley, let's all do it. Let's all do it and see what we think it
that's
is.
Uncomfortable.
It's
that's,
not
it's really weird. Uncomfortable. Yeah.
But I feel like she's cut her thumbs up, but her fists are pointing backwards.
What is this? What is it?
Okay, we've just
maybe
sent the Illuminati
like,
the secret
you,
message.
I don't want to hear you.
I tricked you.
I don't want to hear anything.
I don't. I've got my thumbs in my ears.
That's an extremely sarcastic gesture in some cultures.
It must be. It must be. This is not. This is a new, different culture.
Wait. Do I feel more sarcastic when I do that? Like, oh, sure. Sure. Yeah. Nope. Yeah. I don't.
I don't know.
Nope,
I'm
more
I
sarcastic. It's weird.
I can say that.
Well, do you? Do you feel like, a little more sarcastic?
The W, like, or how do you do it? Yeah, whatever. Like, that's a sarcastic gesture. We need that.
See,
whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I have so many questions.
Let's, how about if I just type, think? That's sarcastic, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's sarcastic. I don't understand what I'm seeing here. Now I've got the
low
eyes.
Confidence.
Low confidence.
This Deepmoji doesn't know what's going on.
Deepmoji, it thought chaos is a ladder was sarcastic, but you think is... Or maybe it's just low confidence.
How about this? You put like, oh, I'm sure everything will work out just as planned.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will. I'm sure everything
will
work out.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, that's good.
Medium confidence.
Wow.
What?
What?
That's like the
this
most
is not a very confident
sentence in the English language.
I think it is. I think that is the most.
Oh, wait. Put at the very beginning of it like, what could possibly go wrong?
Like
and see
maybe,
if maybe they.
Oh?
Yeah. Let's add a little flavor to it. Let's see what happens.
How about just O period? Like full stop. Oh.
Yeah. Let's try that.
What could possibly go wrong? No, it didn't help at all.
It's medium. That's weird.
Deepmoji, come on.
Words are highlighted based on emotional impact. Click a word to turn it on or off. So I could turn O on or off.
Nice.
I don't know what these emojis mean.
Is that like the emoji translation of your sentence?
That's what I thought.
I did not realize the emoji movie was so bad. I mean, I knew it was bad.
Did you see it? Did you see it?
I didn't see it. I refuse.
I wanted to.
I think it got a 5 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I feel like it's, for that reason, it deserves my attention. I need to see if it's as bad.
If it's that bad, you might want to see it.
No.
No?
Nope. Maybe there's so much good to see out there. There's so much great. Like, don't waste your time with that.
Yeah. There are some very good movies. Now,
Watch Glow instead.
Glow is good. I was surprised. And Mark Maron, finally, a podcaster makes it big, right?
Are you going to be in season two, Leo?
I want to be in season... I have a mask.
You should go on Glow season two, and you should like introduce the girls to like the Apple computer because it's in the 80s.
Oh, is it in the 80s? It's actually a true story, right? There were the gorgeous ladies of wrestling in the 80s were this thing.
Great documentary about it on Netflix. You should watch it. Great complimentary piece to the fictional TV series.
Glow is,
I will second that. It is a very good doc, and it is very
great documentary.
It's like, it's a great watch right after the show. So
yeah,
if you like
really good.
I've only seen the first two episodes, but I am ready.
Oh my God.
Nice.
I have my Lucho Libre mask. I think it's quite fetching, actually.
Wow.
No, I was so pleased.
I like that it's a San Francisco 49ers Lucho Libre.
Yeah.
Really.
Niners!
Wow.
For people not watching but listening at home. You're missing all the
You're missing fun. Out.
Yeah.
You are really missing out.
Missed out quite a moment, yeah.
I don't remember where I bought this. I think I bought it in Mexico, but I may be wrong. I could be wrong. Dark
and
Tower.
I like that you just have it at your desk.
Yes.
Like, it just happened to be there. Like, that is my favorite thing. You're like, you know what? Maybe today. Today is going to be the day. Put that underneath your desk, and you're like, oh, please, fingers crossed.
Well, and I want to point out to everybody, you mentioned Glow. I didn't put any words in your mouth. That just happened.
I know.
Mark Maron plays a perfect part for Mark Maron, which is a disaffected cocaine sniffing director. And I think he's quite good in it.
So funny.
Yeah. Now, to really be fair, he had a career as a well-known career as a comic before he interviewed Barack Obama on his podcast. But I feel like still he's one of us. And he's made it into the mainstream world. So I'm very proud of him. Very proud.
Good stuff.
Yep.
Can we talk about the HBO hack? The hackers at HBO?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Whoa, thank you. We haven't talked about
that. Because, I mean, Game of Thrones is going to be on in about an hour. And I feel like we got to talk about this HBO stuff. Because it's scary.
Let me
it's
do
really
a commercial
scary for HBO
because I want to make sure that you get out of here before Game of Thrones. Mm. Wait a minute, you're on the West Coast. You got plenty of time.
I watch it on HBO now, so I watch it at 6.
You oh what?
Wait, you can watch it at 6?
Guys, oh you're missing out.
What? I thought I had
on HBO now. It goes up right at 6.
HBO Go, does it go up right away too?
Should
Wow.
Don't wait.
That like now you know why you watch his show. It's for life hacks like that.
Scoop of the week. Scoop of the week.
Wow. That should be your headline. TIL.
Yeah. That's.
We're almost. Isn't this like, is this the last one or second to last one for this first part of the season?
Second to last.
Yeah. It's penultimate. There's only, as you know, they go, there's only one more episode. Oh, I love it when they say that. Yeah. Only one more. So
and
two
how many more.
More
seasons after this? Well,
and this is a half season, and they're going to do one more half season.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like 7 more episodes after this season's over.
And it's over. And the people, finally, the people of Croatia are safe once again.
I am honestly having trouble remembering what happened
in the earlier
episodes. It's like, that was like 5 years ago,
Dylan,
and 100 dead characters ago.
Wait till you're my age. That happens with every movie. Who's he? What did he say? Why is he there? Who's that? every show. Why did he shoot that arrow? Who shot? He did what?
It's a real challenge with this one, though. I mean, how many episodes?
I'm sure Ashley probably, I bet, has like notebooks and maps.
I know them all.
Everyone I care about. And I just can't remember that far back.
I won't go into a deep. I don't want to spoil anybody who hasn't been watching. I don't want to spoil anyone.
I know. I wish, you know, I got to do one of those podcasts where it's a spoiler cast and you can talk freely because none of our shows are we allowed to talk about this stuff because we're, you know, our audience,
people get mad,
is full of the kind of people who say, spoiler alert.
No,
spoilers. No spoilers.
But it's so good this season. It's really great.
I think it's the best season yet.
I agree.
Whoa.
Especially after last,
whoa, really?
Especially after last week. Okay.
I think last week's episode is one of the best in the series.
Put it
period.
Right over the top.
Yeah. It's one of the best.
But I heard
the
waiting.
First couple were kind of weak. Is that true?
The first one was exposition, but that's every year. Every season they
every
do
year.
That.
They got to reset it all up.
They have to. Yeah. So there's a lot of exposition and Cersei standing at the map saying, I'm going to take this all over and all that stuff.
Shit, Leo, no spoilers. No spoilers.
That's not a spoiler. You didn't know from day one that Cersei
She's been
was
doing
thinking,
that since the beginning of the
I'm
going to
take this all. It's all mine, baby. I want that Iron Throne. That's mine. Well, I don't know how it's going to end. Nobody does because we're off book.
So off book.
It's a mystery. We don't know how it's going to end, but I can tell you one thing. If Cersei's looking for a job, she should go to ZipRecruiter.com.
great segue, Leo. Cool. Good one.
Quality.
I like it.
Yeah.
Really good. A+. 10 out of 10.
Couldn't even do that with a straight face. Zip. If you're hiring or if you're looking for a job, ZipRecruiter is the best place to go. I'll tell you why. As somebody who does hiring, I love it because you're posting. See, I always assume the right person, if you've got a job opening, the right person is there somewhere. It's really the challenge is it's like a needle in a haystack. How do you find them? What job sites are they haunting or what? So where do you reach them? You know, where are they? ZipRecruiter solves it. You post once on ZipRecruiter, they post it to more than 100 job sites and social networks and Twitter and Facebook and everywhere. So this is the easiest way to reach everybody. You just and you cast a wide net because you're more likely to reach that one person. Now, the problem, the reason people don't do this is they don't want a million emails or a million phone calls, but you don't have to worry about that with ZipRecruiter because your jobs, the applicants flow into the ZipRecruiter interface. They don't have your phone number or email. They just go, it all goes in the ZipRecruiter interface where they make it really easy for you. They pre-format all the resumes. They're unified, so it's easy to read them. They give you screening questions. So, you know, you can say, you know, are you the mother of dragons? Yes or no? And if you say, and if they say yes, you know, you just immediately, not today. Thank you. And then you go through the rest and you rank them and you hire the right person fast. You're going to get, in fact, on 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter, you're going to get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. Great if you're trying to reach techies because techies love ZipRecruiter. But not just techies, any kind of professional. Take your company to the next level with the perfect hire. You're going to be a hiring hero. More than 300 applications delivered. More than a million people use ZipRecruiter. You got to try this today. In fact, we got a free trial. No reason not to. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Who will it be? Will it be Cersei or the Mother of Dragons looking for work? We don't know, but either way, ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And maybe Lord Baelish will need to hire some people, some more eunuchs to staff. Yeah. I don't know.
A toggleable option.
More little birds.
I like it. I got to tell my mom to get on that because she's a recruiter. So
oh, yeah.
She probably really like
she
that.
I'm sure. I bet you she knows about it. Recruiters
probably.
Yeah, I'm sure she knows all about it. So HBO. If this is actually the new trend, and I don't think Sony started. I really think Korea hacked Sony. I think that North Korea, I think that was really a political job. But it might have opened the eyes of other hackers saying, you know, there's probably money to be made. And of course, remember the production company that did some of the Netflix originals got hacked. They got the Orange is the New Black, but they kind of blew it because they got all but the last two episodes, right? And they said, hey, Netflix, if you don't pay us, we're going to release them. And Netflix said, pfft. Because who cares about the? It's the last two episodes. Everybody's going to watch it anyway. If you don't
you're going to subscribe to Netflix.
You're going to subscribe. In fact, it's the best possible publicity. You can watch every game.
That was our favorite
game.
Friend, the Dark Overlord.
The Dark Overlord. That's right. You do a very good Dark Overlord, by the way. So is it? You think it's the Dark Overlord? Yeah. You think it's the? We won't do a reprise of that unless it comes up. But do you? But she does an excellent Dark. Did you ever hear from the Dark Overlord after mocking?
I never did. I never did.
Mocking him?
He probably subscribes to my tiny letter.
Hello, Ashley. This is the Dark Overlord. And I just want you to know I love you.
So they got some scripts. They didn't get the video of Game of Thrones. They got.
No, I think it was the video too.
Oh, did they?
This is, it's like a terabyte and a half of data. It's a lot of data.
That's
what they say.
That's not even one episode of the Game of Thrones. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, if they're sending around a couple of like advanced screeners.
Oh, well, that would be interesting.
That's not that big. Those files aren't going to be that big. So I don't know.
They apparently do have emails, you know, personal data, which might be more compelling, frankly, to HBO.
Mm-hmm.
In a 5-minute video letter from somebody calling themselves Mr. Smith to HBO chief executive Richard Pepler, the hackers told the company to pay within 3 days or they would put online. Yeah, I guess so. The HBO shows and confidential corporate data they claim to have stolen. But this was like a week ago, right?
Yeah, I also want to add that Mashable has that video. We access to
Do
some
you?
Of this.
Can I watch
yeah,
it?
So you can watch the ransom message purportedly sent to HBO CEO Richard Pleplar. And we have what we believe is his full contact list from his phone. And there were a lot of other documents. You know,
how
so
did
they,
you
they
get that?
Well, so the hackers have been in touch with some members of the press, and they've released small batches of the total 1.5 terabytes that they believe to or that they allegedly have. Oh. So, you know,
so
we
now
actually,
is this a video or is this your video of the video?
No,
or?
No, this is their raw video from this data leak.
They
and,
put piano music in it.
They put the Game of Thrones soundtrack. So I don't watch Game of Thrones, but
what?
But someone told me this. I know. I've gotten a lot
Dear
of
Dear Richard
that.
Pfeffler. And actually, Ashley, would you do the honors here? And can you read this?
Oh my God. Yeah, sure. Oh, I can't see the whole screen.
You can't
at
see
the same
it?
Time. Yeah.
Okay. It's like warn you ahead of time. The English is complete. It's like broken.
I'll do it this time. All right.
I can do it. I can see
okay,
it now.
You see
if
it?
You want.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Here, let me.
I am Mr.
Let me scroll back. I'll scroll back for you. Here. I'll scroll back. Here you go.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Quiet.
I love that I have a soundtrack. Dear Richard Pleplier, I am Mr. Smith, and I have the honor to inform you on behalf of my colleagues that we successfully reached into your huge network. We are glad to say that in a complicated cyber operation, infiltration to your network accomplished, and we obtained the most valuable information. We confess that HBO was one of our difficult targets to deal with, but we succeeded. It took about 6 months.
Oh my god!
I should stop there. So I can't do anymore.
It's so good. Yeah.
They say. Wait a minute. How about this
the
paragraph?
The soundtrack really makes it exciting.
Start with now. Can you see that?
Yeah. Go now. Ahead. We have your precious data, which cost you millions of dollars. Insecure 2, the Juice S1, Barry Season 1.
What's Barry?
Room 104. Room 104 Season 1, Baller Season 3, Vice Principal Season 2, Steven Spielberg Documentary, A World in Disarray, Tour de Pharmacy, Defiant Ones, and etc.
They wanted six months worth of their salary in Bitcoin.
Right.
But what do you mean their salary? What is their salary?
The message is so long and so dumb.
It's really long. It's
about $6 million.
$6 million? They say they claim they make $1 million a month?
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
I know.
These guys don't seem like the sharpest tools in the hacker show.
No. I think it's Dark Overlord. And I think you humiliated him so badly, Ashley, that he wants to call himself something else now. Mr. Smith. He says, you can't mock me as Mr. Smith. Oh, by the way, good to know, we are white hats. You must trust us.
Yeah, unbelievable.
HBO,
well, so HBO said, oh, well, if you're white hats, we'll offer you. They offered them what, $250,000 as a like a bug bounty.
Oh.
And they were I don't know if they
I'm
I think
sorry.
They refused to pay that.
That's less
I
think it, than 1 week's salary.
Yeah. It's not enough.
It's not enough.
You have 3 days to make the decision, so decide wisely.
So since then, I think they've actually dumped a little bit more data, including a couple of episodes from the upcoming season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. So I think that broke today, if I'm not mistaken, like this afternoon.
Season 9. So, and is it a video? It's actual video?
Yes. I haven't had a chance to look at that set of data, but yeah. That's what Bloomberg reported earlier today. Okay.
And HBO's response is no, we're not going to give you the money.
So HBO's been slow to comment. I mean, we included a statement that essentially says, you know, they're working with the FBI. They really don't want to talk about a pending investigation, et cetera, et cetera. But they would not verify the message that we published. So they wouldn't, you know, tell us whether it was in fact sent to their CEO. And I think they're playing their cards very close to their chest is just an easy way to say it. They're not really saying too much about this hack.
Somebody in the chat room said we should name this hack Wanna Laugh.
that's good.
The letter ends with maybe Ashley, just one more, if I might. Do we have to pay you extra? Do we have to pay SAG scale for this?
I feel like now, I feel like scale next time, third time. First two times is you can Taft Hartley me, fine, and then after that it's SAG.
I'll do this. I'm cheaper. There are two mottos. Which one is remembered? Winter is coming, HBO is falling, or winter is coming, HBO is standing and everlasting. As Architect said in Matrix 2, all right, now showing they have no taste at all, the problem is choice. Good luck to HBO. In other news, rogue deer attacks innocent man in a parking lot.
I think HBO's best strategy with this is just to kind of would do exactly what they're doing, which is like hang back and let these guys prove whether they're idiots or not. And they're probably idiots.
And honestly, like even if they leak scripts or whatever it is, like Game of Thrones last week was still the most highest rated show on television. I mean,
incidentally, it is both the most highest rated show on television and the most pirated show on television already. So that it doesn't matter, in other words, right?
Yeah, I didn't know that statistic. I mean, we wrote an interesting, or one of our reporters wrote an interesting story that posited the question, do you pay the ransom in situations like this? You know, what are the upsides and what are the downsides? And it gets into some of the game theory that these companies have to deal with when they're deciding to negotiate with hackers, or at least address some of the problems that that come up when someone steals as much as a terabyte or more of your information. So, you know, I would ask you guys, like, do you think that HBO under any circumstance should pay this ransom? Is there
no, never pay the ransom.
Absolutely not. Never negotiate with terrorists. They should listen to their own content that they put on the internet, that they put online and broadcast out. Never negotiate with terrorists.
It doesn't even work. Half the time they take the money and then they're like, sorry,
and release it all anyway.
Yeah.
Well, but the Sony hack, I think the you know, it shows you what can happen when you don't negotiate with terrorists, right? So there was actually there was a lot of money that was lost. There were, you know, people that lost their jobs. They obviously the movie The Dictator didn't have a successful rollout.
The Interview. The Interview.
I'm sorry, The Interview.
I don't want Sung Young Moon, whatever his name, coming after us now. The Interview. Our leader.
But Michael, isn't there something to be said about the fact that that particular situation was more of like we were saying, like a government sponsored thing to keep a movie from coming out? Like it's a little bit of a different situation than a group of third party hackers somewhere in the world going, hey, let's just go hack HBO and hold them.
It must scare Hollywood a little bit, though, because this is it appears now that Hollywood is being targeted.
Yeah. Disney was, they said Disney, you know,
You know, so we can't say definitively that this is not a nation state hack, right? Like, no one knows the source of this or the source of this.
I am Mr. Smith and I am King John Owen's little brother.
Anybody who pays this, you know, anybody who pays a ransom has no guarantee of that data continuing to be safe.
Sure, but like, let's say the last episode of Game of Thrones goes online tonight or tomorrow. You know, then what? I mean, isn't that a huge opportunity? Or I don't know if the right term is opportunity cost, but doesn't HBO risk losing some of the
zero risk?
Every single HBO
fan will avoid it as a spoiler. Or even if they watch it, they will absolutely watch the last episode. And nobody's going to cancel an HBO subscription because they saw the last episode on the internet.
Yeah, and how many new subscriptions are they expecting in the next week anyway?
Exactly.
And what percentage would be affected by some, dark net version of the show being available and possible to download if you're clever enough with BitTorrent?
I think the real risk is not the shows, but the individual and personal information.
Emails to me.
It's emails.
That's, the personal information Richard Pepler, and the emails.
And if there's a Richard Pepler, saying in an email, "Oh, that Tyrion Lannister, he's too short," or whatever. That could be embarrassing. In fact, that's what cost Amy Pascal her job at Sony was those emails.
But surely HBO has a pretty good idea what's in their own emails, right? So my guess is that unless there's something explosive, they're not going to negotiate.
Personal phone numbers of actors, no big deal. You pay a little money, you get the actors all to change their numbers. That's not a big deal.
Right.
Unless there's nude, well, even if there were nude photos of Cersei Lannister, what are they going to do? Shame.
Well, shame. Guess what? Wait. Shame. That happened last
there's
year.
Nothing,
we all saw
she
it.
Was
there's nothing to see here.
The show.
Yeah.
There's nothing they can gain out of it. It's like network television. That's different because, you know, those people aren't naked. Yeah. It's HBO.
I would only push back a little bit because what you're saying implies that this hack is meaningless and that there are no risks involved in this hack, which is, I think, a little bit overstated, right? Like, there is some money to be lost from HBO. And you already said this is the most pirated television show in the world, I think was what you said. And so, if that's the case, then maybe there are more people that would watch a leaked episode than we realize. And,
I'm sure there are.
But those people, here's my argument, is that those people who are watching leaked episodes are already torrenting HBO.
By the way, they're the biggest fans. Now, maybe they don't buy HBO, but if they weren't buying it before either, probably, right? Because they're
right. Yeah. That's my argument. They're the biggest, are already torrenting television.
And if you're a big fan, I think a not insignificant number of them probably still pay for HBO. The only people who don't are people who can't afford it. And so they justified saying, well, I can't afford it, but I still am a Game of Thrones fan. But I think if you're a real fan and you can't afford it, you pay for it because you want to support HBO.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's consequences. There's not $6 million worth of consequences. And more to the point, the larger risk is encouraging more attacks.
Yeah, to me, that's
the bigger risk, is that $6 million is paying $6 million is opening a door to a lot of other people stealing your stuff and saying, well, you paid these guys, why not pay us?
Oh, no.
The other thing is $6 million buys an awful lot of network hardening and, pen testing and other kinds of security measures that might actually make a significant difference in preventing future attacks.
I actually think that one of the reasons Amy Pascal had to quit was because Sony did such a crappy job of protecting their network, even in the face of multiple threats. And they knew that it was a problem, and they said, nah, we don't care about security.
That was a spectacularly bad setup at Sony.
Yeah.
So that was part of their problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that, there has to be a circumstance in this HBO. Like, if the hackers truly have 1.5 terabytes of data, there has to be a scenario where this costs HBO more than $6 million, and it's just something worth considering. But I would agree, for the most part, you don't negotiate with terrorists. I think that you would only encourage people to do this type of to commit this type of crime more frequently. But I think, if you're evaluating the economic repercussions of this, there has to be a scenario where this costs HBO much more than $6 million. Because I'm pretty sure in the Sony hack, they lost more than that amount, I would think. I don't know exactly what it cost them, but my guess is that it was more than $6
million. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
There was no attempt to collect a ransom in the Sony case, though, was there?
No.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
I think there was, but I think it was a half-hearted attempt.
Really?
Yeah.
No, it was don't release the movie. That was what the ransom was.
Right. Okay.
It was don't release the interview. Movie.
Yeah. Mm. Which, frankly, would have been a boon for everyone concerned.
I know. I feel like they could have very easily avoided everything by being like, well, it's not a really good movie. We just won't release it anyway.
Why didn't they do that with the Emoji Movie?
The one good thing you say about the Sony hack is it got a lot more box office for the interview. I think far more people saw that. I watched it because of the hack than didn't,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, here's a bigger concern. the White House. We know the White House security practices are perhaps less than perfect. There's a guy from the UK, and he calls himself Email Prankster, who has had email conversations with Anthony Scaramucci before he got fired. That wouldn't be a weird thing, except he was posing as Reince Priebus. He is.
All this made me laugh.
He has sent emails to Tom Bossert, Eric Trump. He has posed as Jared Kushner, the Homeland Security advisor. Said he thought it was he was talking with Jared Kushner. It wasn't. It was his prankster. He gave him his personal email address, saying, "Jared, anytime you need me, just email me at home." This is the guy in charge of the cyber, of our security.
Yeah.
he should be using Valimail.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, he should. I really love that that guy didn't even bother, the prankster didn't even bother masking the email address. Like, that's my favorite. He was like, I'm not even going to bother, just to see. And like, they
He just used a Gmail account or something, and he just called it.
It was like Reince Priebus.
At gmail.com.
At Gmail or something like that.
I'm going to hyperventilate now. God. He made up new email addresses on Gmail, Yahoo, and Mail.com. He didn't bother faking anything. They didn't bother checking. The guy in charge of Homeland Security, cybersecurity, didn't even... He just said, oh, yeah, it must be Jared, because it says so.
So this guy has actually been going around targeting a bunch of different people. He got, like, the CEO of Goldman... And Barclays Bank in the UK and some other banks, like a bunch of bank chiefs, some British government officials. He's fooled a ton of people using exactly the same playbook.
Is it illegal?
I don't think so.
He hasn't been prosecuted. Eric Trump said, I'm going to get the FBI on him, but you know.
You could use maybe the CAN Spam Act, which says that you have to have a legitimate, like you have to say who you really are in the from field of a message.
But he,
maybe you can use that against him.
That's the thing is he's not really spamming anybody.
He had a conversation.
It's just he's catfishing someone. Catfishing is illegal.
Is catfishing illegal?
No.
On its face, I think it's what you do with it.
I think it's like when it's malicious. Yeah, exactly. Like if you steal someone's identity, yes,
you have to break another law.
That's right. Or if you get them to download some malware and you infect their computer with something. Right.
Right.
But just embarrassing people? I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's illegal. I hope that's not illegal.
I was going to say, he's going to find out soon enough.
So far, there's been no action.
What are you up to, Ashley?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
I hope it's not illegal because it's hilarious. That's what I think this is hilarious.
We have some good news to celebrate. The EFF continues to beat the podcast troll. We received a letter from Personal Audio some years ago asking us for, I think, $2.5 million. That was their mistake because you're supposed to, let me just, a little tip for patent trolls out there. You should always ask for an amount that's less than it would cost to defend the case. And $2.5 million is considerably more even than the highest estimate. They did settle with a number of companies, which gave them a bankroll, enough of a bankroll to appeal. So the EFF won with the Patent and Trademark Office. They got them to overturn the patent. So Personal Audio appealed it to the U.S. Court of Appeals and for the Federal Circuit, which is the Washington, D.C. court that rules mostly on patent law. They've ruled also now in favor of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. I would say, yay, it's over, but they could still go to the Supreme Court if they wanted to. No word about whether Personal Audio will continue to appeal it. But that's one that really sent a chill a few years ago. They sued Adam Carolla. They sued NPR. Sued a lot of companies looking for some money. And apparently it already won money from Apple and others in other patent troll cases. Good news for a good man and a good friend, Mike Masnick of Tech Dirt. He was being sued by a guy who claims to have invented email. Masnick poo-pooed the claim in fairly strong terms. So this guy sued using, the same attorney who represented Hulk Hogan in his case against Gawker. As you imagine, Tech Dirt is not a huge company and probably doesn't have very deep pockets. But fortunately, a number of people have come to their aid, and a $250,000 defense fund has been raised from, of all people, the Charles Koch Foundation, Craigslist founders Craig Newmark, Union Square Ventures Automatic, the WordPress parent, our sponsor, and the Freedom of the Press Foundation. More than $250,000. That should be enough, or at least it should help in Mike Masnick's defense. Mike said the lawsuit's already taken a massive toll on us and our ability to function and report. And it, I have to say, it's a fairly frivolous lawsuit. This guy's claims are, you know, completely nonsense.
Leo, that guy actually filed the same lawsuit against Gizmodo or against Gawker Media. And while it was like a rider to the, or a sideshow to the main Hulk Hogan one, but he won. Like, that's one of the one of the reasons he's going after TechDirt is because he won against Gawker Media.
Wow.
Because they had no defenses. Yeah. They had already been blown away by
Hulk Hogan.
Oh, that's
interesting. They'd already been defeated. Yeah.
When I was there at the time, I was working for Gizmodo, and it was, you know, there was a lot of, it was a painful time, I think, for a lot of the reporters there, because there were only a couple of articles that had to be removed following the Hogan lawsuit. And one of them was this article that called into question this individual who claims to have invented email, when, you know, every computer expert that we, that these reporters could contact with said otherwise. And so, it was a really painful time, and, you know, and it's not, there you go. Yeah. So right now we're looking at the page on Gizmodo, and, the story had to be removed, and Gawker Media had a really strict policy about never removing any of the stories that were written, especially if they were true. And so, so in this case, it was rough, and it's kind of, it's sad to see that this is continuing.
Gawker paid him $750,000.
Jeez.
Wow.
And so I will say, if you go to the Internet Archive, if you're interested in this story, I would encourage you to go to the Internet Archive and Google this person's name, who I don't want to whose name I don't really want to say on air, but anyways, you can read the full article via the Internet Archive, and I would encourage you to do that because it's a really good one.
Yeah.
And the person that wrote it is now working at the New York Times.
Well, there you go.
Nice.
I don't want him to sue me, but if you look at the facts of the case, Mike clearly is in the right. So we'll see what happens. But I'm glad he's got a defense fund. But you could see $750,000 may not be enough. Wow.
Yeah, and what a huge claim to have invented email is so it's such a substantial claim. And
well, it's also demonstrably, I mean, you can look at history and see where he says he invented email, but it sounds like he genuinely feels like he invented it, but he invented it kind of independently after it had already been invented.
In the 1970s or something is when he came on.
Right. So it's and very, it's odd. Correct, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. And what this individual claims is that he invented it as a teenager, or maybe even younger than a teenager. Right. So I don't know. It's a very interesting story.
You can assert that. I thought before I knew email existed, I thought of it. I mean, it's not necessarily. and
you invented it in a school project.
Yeah. I thought of this. I thought of the Snuggie too, but
yeah.
Actually, here we are.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
I invented the iPad way back in the 90s.
Right. I duct taped my phone to my clipboard, and
it's practically the same.
It's exactly the same thing. It's,
yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Snapchat.
How are we not billionaires?
Snapchat, sad story. Snapchat stock goes down 17%. Revenue and daily user growth. They did not have good quarterly results. Even with a hot dog filter, it seems to be Instagram's eating their lunch, or maybe the kids are just tired of Snapchat.
Well, Instagram is, maybe. I mean, the thing is you blatantly copy a company's entire business model and you have a bigger built-in user base. I mean, it's anybody who's on Facebook or joins Facebook is encouraged to join Instagram. It's like, it's so integrated that it's easy.
Actually, Wall Street Journal wrote this article, "The New Copycats, How Facebook Squashes Competition from Startups." This is Betsy Morris and Deepa Sitharaman. But Microsoft did that for years, and everybody knew it. It was engulf and devour, yeah. You know? And they got away with it most of the time. They'd occasionally get sued, but they got away with it most of the time.
But they were eventually brought in front of Congress because
right.
there were monopoly accusations, if I right.
yes.
remember correctly, right?
Yes.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was young, so I read about it, but it was later in life.
It was 1998, and the Department of Justice said you're a monopoly, and you're using your monopoly power to with the browser to force Netscape out of business, essentially. And it went on for a long time, and in fact, they lost. The Department of Justice got a consent decree, and for a long time, and there was a monitor in Microsoft watching their behavior. They had similar problems in the EU and also lost there.
Do you think that there's
the EU has a lot harder, they have some harder rules there.
Yeah.
Is there overlap between what was happening then and what's happening now in social media? Because it seems like Facebook is able to squash any form of competition at this point. You know, I think Snapchat's not the only social media company that's struggling to compete with Facebook, right? I mean, Twitter is another prime example, and I'm sure there are plenty of others that that aren't publicly traded that are having trouble. So, you know, I wasn't around. I mean, I was using computers, but I was still too young to really understand what was going on with Netscape and Internet Explorer and Windows and all and that.
I'll tell you the difference. You want to know what the difference was?
Yeah.
At that time, the Department of Justice prosecuted trusts. They had antitrust prosecution. I doubt very much there'll be any antitrust prosecution. And there hasn't been in a while, and I doubt very much there'll be for at least the next 4 years. There's just no interest in doing that. So
it was very clear cut with Microsoft, too. I mean, there were basically two choices for computers. You know, if you wanted to use a personal computer, and Microsoft controlled 95% of them plus.
Right. And in 96, so Microsoft gave Apple $150 million to not because they loved Apple, but just to keep them alive so there'd be some competition.
Exactly. Whereas with Facebook, I mean, even though they reach 2 billion people and they have an enormous reach, there's still significant alternatives. You can point to Twitter, you can point to LinkedIn, you know, Snap for that matter. And then the second thing is like you have to catch them doing something to abuse that monopoly power. You have to, you know, like forcing people to install Instagram instead of Snap. I don't know.
It's not going to happen in the U.S. It might happen in Europe. There's certainly a lot of activity there. But at this point, I feel like Microsoft had nothing on Facebook. Facebook is so dominant.
Well, we're just talking about, like, it's funny, like, two or three stories today have been about how these huge companies just eating everybody else's lunches.
Right.
Amazon,
The thing Facebook can do that Google maybe can't do and Microsoft can't do is really point to other social media. So they say, what are you talking about? We don't own the market. Look at Twitter. Look at
Google Plus, you guys.
Google Plus.
Right there waiting Google for Plus. Everybody.
Look at it.
Plenty of competition.
A lot of good content on that site, too.
Yeah. Bitcoin is now over $4,000. It's finally reached the point where I actually started to download my Bitcoin wallet, 128 gigabytes worth. Actually, that's the whole blockchain, but trying to recover my Bitcoin. Oh. Look at this. And this is an interesting story because it's after the fork, after the Bitcoin Cash fork a couple of weeks ago. And I think you can now declare victory for the original Bitcoin, that the Bitcoin Cash has not taken off. It's all up to the miners. And, we'll see. We'll watch with interest. But, boy, Bitcoin is very, very strong these days. Our show today, let me wrap it up with a final commercial and a final words from our fabulous panel of experts, Ashley Esquetha from CNET, from Mashable.com, Michael Nunez, deputy tech editor there, and from the brand new Valley Mail, Dylan Tweeney, head of communications over there. This is a system that validates your email. What does it do?
So that people receiving your email can be sure that it comes from you.
Very important. Businesses would use this, right? More than
yes.
I think mostly you've got to call the White House.
Although the White House needs it too, yes.
you got to get right on the White House. Let me just see. I think this one would be really good. I'm just checking my domain. This is going to be really protected. Damn it. Damn it.
Our Call me, Leo.
Sure, this one's really safe. Our show today... Right, I do have an SPF record, but it's got one or more issues. And the D market record has critical errors.
You get an A for effort.
I try. Okay. At least I have a SPF
You're
record.
Trying.
I'm trying. Yes. I have no visibility into third-party email services. I'm partially optimized to control deliverability. I'm totally unprotected against impersonation attacks. So go on, spammers. Just use it. Use it all you want. Our show today brought to you by my doorbell. At least my stoop is safe. My front stoop, completely protected by the Ring video doorbell. I put that in a couple of years ago. I told you about it then. I'm not a handyman. It was easy to install. I replaced my old doorbell, and then I paired the Ring up to my internet, my Wi-Fi, and now it's got a camera, microphone, and speaker. When somebody and motion sensors. When somebody walks by my door, I can see them. When somebody rings my doorbell, I can talk to them. I can say, hey, what do you want? Or leave that package, or I'm in the bathtub, don't break in right now. They did an interesting study. Ring gave Ring doorbells to 10% of the homes in a Southern California community. Crime was reduced by half. Crooks Wow. do not like the Ring video doorbell, and they're really not going to like Ring's new floodlight cam. I love this. If you go to ring.com/twit, you can get up to $150 off a Ring of security kit that includes the doorbell and the floodlight cam, one, two, or three floodlight cams. The camera, you've seen this before, motion-activated floodlights. That's not, a lot of people have that. And that's actually a great convenience when you walk down, you know, the side alley of your house or behind your house or out by the barn, if you have a barn. I don't have a barn, but if you have a barn, the things light up and it lets you see your way. But the other thing that's there is a camera and a speaker and a microphone. It's just like the Ring video doorbell. So you get notification, even if you're not home, wherever you are on your phone. Somebody is out back. You can see them. You can talk to them. You can say, get out of here. And if they don't leave, you can press a button on the app and send a 110 decibel alarm out into their ears. And, man, if that doesn't scare them away, I don't know what to say. This is really effective in protecting your security. And if you don't, well, you got a great HD video of them, which will be helpful in prosecution later. Ring.com/twit. I love these. And I am a big fan. You will be, too. I want you to go to ring.com/twit and save up to $150. Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017. It just gets better and better. Ring.com/twit. It's very satisfying, actually. And see, because the doorbell, like I know when people come and go, I have a record, a time record of everybody who's come and gone, you know, or even just walked by the house. And then with the things in the back... Like, it's very satisfying. You could mostly for in our neighborhood, it's you know, deer, but it's still fun to scare them away. You just go, but I can't wait. If I ever get a prowler, man, I'm just gonna scare them away. Let's see. Let's a couple of last minute things here. The FCC is extending its comment period another 2 weeks. That's a positive sign. If you have not yet gone to GoFCC yourself, John Oliver's site, where you can make your comments to the FCC to preserve net neutrality. They've decided to extend it to August 30th. The deadline was originally the 16th. So we got a little reprieve. That's actually
go
great.
Go do that.
By the way, the broadband comments. Industry did not want to extend. So maybe there's a chink in the armor. Maybe there's a little opportunity.
Yeah, go do that. And then if you have... couple extra bucks a month donated to the EFF.
I send them. I send them $100 a month.
Yes,
I'm thrilled to do it.
I have a recurring. Yeah. I have a recurring donation.
It's automatic.
I have my T-shirt. T-shirt.
They're doing God's work, trying to protect us. And you can find out more at EFF.org. By the way, that's good. Thank you, Ashley. Good to give them a little plug. The guy who wrote the original NIST document on passwords says, "I'm sorry, I'm wrong." And it's been plaguing you all this time. This Bill Burr wrote it in 2003. He's the guy who said use numbers, obscure characters, capital letters, but worse, said change it a lot every 3 months or more, every 90 days or more. And that's why you keep getting notices from your company saying it's time to change your password again. It's so frustrating. The NIST has finally updated this, saying there's no good reason to change your passwords regularly. Don't, unless you think you've been compromised. Mr. Burr, he's now 72 and retired, said, "Much of what I did, I now regret." Oh, come on. No. No, you. It's a,
don't say that.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
So no really, regrets. You know what? I bet he uses Inkwell a lot.
So if you haven't read the new NIST recommendations, I recommend you do. And more importantly, if your IT guy or your sysadmins are requiring that you change your password every 3 months, the company I work for on the radio show does. It drives me nuts. Send them the new NIST regulations. Recommendations. And let him know he doesn't have to do that anymore.
Use a password manager. That's what I hate.
Well,
I,
that's the I obvious answer,
that.
Right?
That is the smart
Just
answer, yeah.
Let the password manager do its job. Generate long passwords. The longer, the better. And you only have to remember one password, the password manager's password.
A plus, that's the best way. I've been trying to get family members little by little over to password managers, and it's a little inconvenient at first, but then once you get the hang of it, it's so much better.
Yes. And finally, in the annals of biohacking, you know that we've seen attacks that would compromise, say, a PDF or a JPEG and use flaws in the software that renders the JPEG or the PDF to hack your system. Those are well-known attacks. One of the few attacks that data can actually infect your system. Biohackers have figured out how to synthesize DNA that will infect computers running sequencing software and let them take it over. They're going to present at the USENIX conference on Thursday. You can now pwn a computer with malicious DNA.
Wow.
Well, I mean, they were able to put a movie on a strand of DNA, so it makes sense.
I think the tech revolution we've seen over the last 20 years, the internet revolution,
nothing
compared to what's about to happen with CRISPR. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bio revolution,
AI, robotics,
and it's happening so fast that there's no way we can prepare for it. Just buckle your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
Wow, grim, Leo.
It's going to be fun. No, it's going to be fun. And at the end, we'll all be in jars. Our brains will be in jars. And Ashley will be a robot. She'll be our robot.
I'll either have my very own or I will be some version of Rosie the robot from the Jetsons.
You can come around and put new saline in our jars and keep us happy.
And the only thing we'll be using our DNA for is like watching old YouTube videos, which will be encoded on them, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, they've already hacked Leo's DNA. They got into 23andMe and they're like, we got to get in here.
You know how you can tell? DNA. You know how can you tell? The clones use the Inkwell filter. That's how you can tell. Nice. That's a dead giveaway. Hey, you guys are great. Thank you so much for being here. Michael Nunez, what are you working on right now at Mashable as deputy executive?
I'm not allowed to say, but I can promise you that it's really exciting, and you should just stay tuned. Please keep checking in Mashable Tech. We cover a lot of gadgets, and hopefully we'll start doing some investigative stuff pretty soon. So,
how exciting.
That's all I can say.
You're going to get to do that?
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't have come here if otherwise. So we're definitely, you know, there's more going on that I'm able to talk about, but certainly we're watching the HBO thing very closely and a couple of other things.
Now, I did not do your story about Elon Musk, who created an AI that beat the world champion Dota 2 player at his own game. I did not do this only because I don't understand why that's a big deal. Wouldn't you expect a computer to be better than humans at computer games?
You would think, but like the way that it was described or the way that I understood it was that this is like, it's like four-dimensional chess or something like that. You know, this is, it's like a board game like chess or Go.
There's so much strategy. I don't know Dota 2 well enough. There's so much strategy in it that this is a strategy game.
Yes.
It's not how fast you click.
That's right. Yeah, it's not only how fast you click, but it's also where you're putting different pieces. And so, you know, it's like a very fast game of chess. Essentially, you have different tiers of players, and they can be moved around the board more dynamically than in chess. And so, my understanding is that this is actually quite hard, and this is this achievement was actually something very substantial beyond what I fully understand, to be totally honest. Yeah. I just understand it as a tough game and a tough challenge for AI.
Somebody, was it Carson, was saying the real takeaway from the story is that Dota 2, the purse was $10 million. It's like, This is big business. And look
it's
at this.
It's on ESPN, I mean, 2 this weekend.
Yeah.
Or then there's an esports channel that runs it. So I was actually, my whole weekend was spent watching the Overwatch, the quarterfinals or whatever from BlizzCon.
I dig Overwatch. Wow. I like
Overwatch Championship. That's my jam. That's what I've been doing all weekends.
But a computer could win Overwatch easy, right? Because it's just about how fast you move and perceive. Oh,
Versus me, my friend. Not versus me.
Oh, what character, what heroes do you like?
I main as Pharah. But then I play Winston a lot because a lot of people in my SR rating are not very good at Winston. So I play Winston, and then I'm a pretty good Zenyatta and a really, like, fight dirty Symmetra. So it's fun. I love it. Overwatch is the best.
Symmetra.
So that's interesting. Do you prefer female heroes?
Not necessarily. This is a really weird, God, I can't believe I'm admitting to this on your show to so many people. I used to be a professional esports player, like way a long time ago before it was even a thing.
I didn't know that. What game? Quake?
I was Unreal Tournament 2003.
Wow.
UT2K3. And I was signed to Global Gaming League before it was like a thing. Like, this was a long time ago.
What was your handle? So
it was Vila. From Nordic mythology, and I guess Harry Potter. So that was like a double surprise. But yeah, so
it's
that was
both
my
Harry Potter and Nordic mythology.
Yeah, false. No, guys, I'm the Dark Overlord. It's spoiler alert. Oh. I actually speak like that. No, it's So I love fun, like colorful first person shooters, and so I don't really love Call of Duty and the ones that are like, how can we make killing people as realistic as possible? I'm not into that.
No, that's why I like Overwatch. Overwatch is beautiful and fun, and the heroes are amazing, and they all have weird abilities. The only problem I have is it's just so fast. I mean, you worked your way up to it. It is tough.
It's so fast.
It gets so hairy instantly.
And that's a Blizzard game,
or is it a Bungie game? I play Pharah mostly because I love the rocket launcher. That's like, it's so good.
Well, who doesn't, right? It's Blizzard, right?
Yeah, that's Blizzard.
Okay. And they make just like quality games across the board.
They sure
do.
And they know how to run a network.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. They're
full disclosure, my brother works at Blizzard. So I'm not like legally required to say that, but we have loved Blizzard games since before he worked there. Oh, and he works on Heroes of the Storm.
Oh, no.
Everyone.
Who doesn't? Diablo. I mean, come on. StarCraft.
Yeah. World of Warcraft. Hearthstone. Hearthstone is like one of the biggest. It's a huge
card
game.
It's a card game.
Like,
yeah. It's
crazy.
Fun.
Oh. Everyone plays it.
It's easily the best iOS card game. You know, there are a lot of Magic-style card games on iOS, but that's easily the best of them.
It's really well put together,
Clever and fun and all of that. Well, thank you for being here, Ashley. I had no idea. We now know something about you.
You do. And it's weird. Like, I don't, like, tell people that. But
I
love
that.
I used to do it.
We honor that. That's
awesome.
Total geek cred. That's awesome.
It was a fun time.
Dylan Tweeney is at Valley Mail. I should spell it so people can find it. ValiMail.com. And is it a startup? Is it pretty new?
Yeah, it's a startup. About a year and a half old. 30 people, maybe.
Nice. Are you enjoying startup life?
You know, I did not set out to join a startup. In years of covering startups, I kind of had decided at the end when I left VentureBeat that was the last thing I wanted to do. But I did some work for these guys, and they seem to have their heads screwed on straight. It's not kind of like what you the sort of the classic story of a startup where people are running around with barely any idea what they're doing.
Startups. I love security startups. I think
I would have to say yes. I'm enjoying it.
Good. Yeah, I'm gonna find out more. This looks really, really amazing, and I think every company should be using it. After happened at the White House, it's obviously pretty important.
I think so too, Leo.
Yes,
thanks for saying so.
But you know what they need? They need a really good director of communications, because I don't think it's immediately obvious what this is all about. I understand it, But I think I think in general, business doesn't know. What do you mean, validate my email? What do you mean?
It's a little hard to explain, yeah. And then you get into all these internet standards like SPF and DKIM, and people get really confused. Yeah. So I have some work to do.
Good. That's a good job, a chewy job. We're going to let everybody go because apparently, I didn't know this, Game of Thrones is available on HBO Now in 25 minutes. So I got places to be.
Yes.
Let's go.
Let's all go. I'll make the popcorn. and I understand that Ashley will wear the Fira costume, so that'll be really fun.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got my rocket launcher, my helmet. Justice reigns from above. Justice is in the forecast.
Okay, one more question. Have you ever done Fira cosplay?
No, but there's a friend of mine who does, and she is a dead ringer for Farrah. Her cosplay is amazing. Her name is Mylin Sarley, and you should look it up because it's the best thing you'll ever see.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, she literally, it's the full gold, blue and gold costume, rocket launcher. She looks just like Farrah. I mean, it's incredible. She is a plus 12 out of 10 cosplay. It's unbelievable.
It's like armor, right? That's armor.
Yeah. Ooh. Wow. Yeah, it's amazing. There it is. Look at that. It's so good.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
She was walking around BlizzCon last year, and I was just like, I cannot believe you put that together, and it is absolutely incredible.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. It's been a fun twit. If you want to watch us live, you can do that every Sunday afternoon. We do a new show every Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. Just tune in twit.tv/live. If you do that, though, please join us in the chat room because that's a great place to participate in the show. And as you could tell, it's a big part of our content is the feedback from the chat room, irc.twit.tv. But you'll find more information at twit.tv, the website. In fact, you'll find on-demand audio and video of the show there as well. And all of our shows, twit.tv, or where, you know, subscribe, whatever you do to get your podcast, whatever program you use. If you search for Twit, you will find Twit, one of the oldest podcasts on the internet. And still going strong after 12 years. If you'd like to be in studio, we'd love to have you. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a seat out for you. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
This is amazing.
Good show. Fun.
Doing the Twit.